go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 17th day of May, 2024. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn Chat Room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast as well. But if you're listening live, well, goodness gracious, feel free to go on over to the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, and you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, both of them, Irish Dave and Squeaky, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. It is, in fact, Friday on the front porch. Sorry about yesterday. Those days will occur here in the next 6 months or so as we attempt to further the making of history here in West Virginia. No, I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean we happy few, as we try to begin clawing West Virginia back from the tender mercies of the maggot men and the self-hating women who empower them. Yes. I mentioned that. I had to our kind anonymous friend. I mentioned the receipt both of some lovely tomato and roasted red pepper soup, as well organic no less. It's soothing and comforting, as well as some barista style oat milk for those moments when there's just a little too much bird flu in one's bovine milk. Yes. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is, of course, no different. So with that regard, we say thank you to our 16th and 17th day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you most kindly to Charlie. Thank you so much, Charlie, for all your support and all your help. Thank you so very kindly. And thanks as well to labor man Gary out in New Mexico. Thank you, Gary. And thank you to Edward. Congratulations, Robin, on becoming the Democratic nominee for the West Virginia House of Delegates for District 51. So happy for you. Onwards to November. Thank you, Edward. That's so kind of you. And thanks as well to Zed in Iowa. Thank you, Mark. Again, going back to Wednesday, thank you so much to Gino, who perhaps, probably by this time, is off and may already be somewhere on the Italian peninsula. And after that, Gino's off to China. The poor life of indolent boredom that our dear friend Gino must endure. The heart, it breaketh. A little sarcastic. I'm terribly, terribly jealous is what I am, but thank you. Thank you, one and all. What that means is that the fundraising goal is at $1,335. $1,335, that means all of today, yesterday doesn't count, as Leonard Skinner famously said. Paraphrasing, yesterday is gone like the wind. They had Tuesday in mind, but Thursday works too. So fundraising for today, Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday, and $125 of last Friday. $125 of last Friday. So that's where fundraising stands. We need to raise that $1,335 if we possibly could, because the middle of the month is the roughest part of the month, and it's also a part of the month where, for instance, my dear, not dear at all, friends at Appalachian Power, providers of rickety coal-fried, falling apart like spitting toilet paper, antiquated late 19th, early 20th century electric power grids, to keep them happy. Okay, so we, like I said, $1,335, whatever we can knock out will be great. And I'm going to continue my mad quest to get the riding lawnmower and the weed eater going. Good God, the grass is tall out there. At this point in time, I think I'd be better off with a goat. But I can't do the goat thing as much as I love goats. See, I'm not like Christy Nome. I like goats. Meh. And that poor goat. Maybe someone should build a time machine and go back to September 11th, 2001, so that George W. Bush can be reading upside down a copy of My Poor Goat by Christy Nome. Yes? But no, seriously. It's got to be something. Drain out the oil, put in new oil. I'm not sure if there's a tank drain on it. I need to find that as far as the gas, any old gasoline is concerned, but get some no alcohol gasoline for it and that sort of stuff. Yes, I did get that message, Ralphs. Thank you. So here we go. I'm starting to change the oil, and I got the battery for it. And I hope I don't have to change out the solenoid. Probably going to have to change the spark plug just for good measure. Make sure there's no water in the gas tank. Because, like I said, it's turning into the Jungle Book out there. And high grass can be dangerous. I have a story. Not particularly earth-shattering, but, well, karma is a booger. There was a guy. I love starting a story with such specificity. There was this guy named Doug Scaff. And at one point in time, he was the minority leader of the House of Representatives. And then he turned Judas and became a maggot and ran for another office this past primary, got his ass handed to him, and then, as any good candidate should on the next day, he went out, he and his son went out to pull up yard signs down in, I think it was Boone County, where he was bitten not once, but twice by copperheads. Snakes. You know, as in, no step on snake. He didn't mean to tread on one, but copperheads are notoriously ill-tempered. And so he got bitten twice, wound up in the hospital. And there's something about, it's not lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas, it's more like, Well, snakes in the grass. He became a snake in the grass when he Judas'd on his on the people who elected him, and then he turned around and found out that, well, pit vipers do serpentine things. Serpentine, Douglas. Serpentine. Hmm? I'm glad he's recovering nicely, but copperhead venom is real icky. How do I get myself into these things? Brother Deacon Asa says, wait a minute, so Lynyrd Skynyrd's Tuesday's Gone is okay for you to name drop on the show, but Bob Seger's Turn the Page is off limits, you racist? This has nothing to do with ethnicity. It has to do with talent? Oh, God, I'm going to catch so much shit from the Michigan contingent. Just not a Bob Seger fan and all of that. Well, and this is a bit that goes back a long way. But Bob Seger's Turn the Page is just so self-servingly, gross.
I'm a rock star and I'm on the road and it's miserable and we got to ride from one town to another in a big old luxury tour bus, and it sucks to be me. And
okay. So, I'm sorry, Brother Deacon. I didn't have a Bob Seger reference for being gone on a Thursday. Ha.
I never
want to diss the lyrical stylings of Mr. Seger. For instance, who could pass up this? I think I may have mentioned this. The lyrics to "Roll Me Away." I mean, the bard would blush. 12 hours out of Mackinac City, stopped in a bar to have a brew. Met a girl, and we had a few drinks, and I told her what I'd decided to do. She looked out the window a long, long moment. Then she looked into my eyes. She didn't have to say a thing. I knew what she was thinking. I'm not sure if thinking rhymes with drinks or thing. But the romance doesn't fully blossom for our narrator in that song. And eventually we find that he stood alone on a mountaintop, staring out at the great divide. I could go east, I could go west. It was all up to me to decide. Just then I saw a young hawk flying, and my soul began to rise, and pretty soon my heart was singing. I'm not sure what his heart was singing. Maybe, for all I know, Turn the Page. Or maybe Tuesday's Gone. You never know. And from the moment I heard that, it was like, how did he know the hawk was young? Was it a really hip hawk? I mean, thinking back to when that song was written, Asa. So Bob Seger likes to smash. So what? Give the man a break, you racist. It's not the smashing I object to.
It's knowing that a hawk that you're, it's knowing the age of a hawk that's a good 200-300 feet above you that bothers me. There's lots of adjectives in English, Brother Deacon. A young hawk? I mean, what was it? What was it? Was it shedding pieces of shell? Was its mother flying along with it, you know, feeding it bits of raw rabbit or something? I mean, how about a great hawk? Or how about a red-tailed hawk? Or for to match the sentiment, how about a noble hawk? Or and how did he know the hawk's gender? Well, he didn't. It was just a young hawk. How about a girl hawk? How about a manly hawk? How about a hungry hawk? Everybody's got a hungry hawk. Ooh. Oh, God, we're off and running. Matt in San Francisco, Bob Seger, for a gal who likes songs about mutilated white doves, you got a lot of nerve to pick apart Bob Seger. Matt, that never would have happened if she didn't mumble her lyrics. Thank God I'm not alone. Lee in New York says, Bob Seger, one lyric I do like is, wish I didn't know now what I didn't know then. I sometimes wish, Lee says, I was naive and happy. Oh, thank God. Literally, thank God it's Friday. And Lee, as to Copperheads and others, hopefully Sam the Studio Serpent isn't giving you any trouble. I would just assume you did not mention Sam again. Hopefully Sam and their family are doing their rat catching, et cetera, job outside. Although, the next door neighbors have a kitty has taken up residence outside the homestead, the mansion. He'd really like to. Well, Brother Deacon Asa was the one who brought up Bob smashing. He's really got a case of Lucy let me smash. No, orange kitty, no, just no. Some days it's a cat. Other days there are bunnies. Some days there are devolved dinosaurs. That one rooster, the net's named Side-Eye Sid, standing under my window yelling, Any cockle-do! God. Wow. And, Jordan Korsgold, music snobber, you can break down any song in a mean way. At least Seger isn't a redneck maggot like the Skynyrd Band. Yeah, well, redneck maggots. There were Ronnie Van Zant never had a chance to be a maggot. Him dead, along with Steve and Cassie Gaines on the. But yeah, they got their right wing on because, well, you play to your market. But that smell came in off. You got to admit, George, that smell came in awfully handy with regard to Nitwit Nero here recently. Still want to know how he knew the age of the hawk. No.
Ralph's Smash is a term that the hip young kids use. He wants to be, well, in the words of Frau Blucher, speaking of Victor Frankenstein, he was my boyfriend. So the orange cat out there wants to be Lucy's boyfriend for at least, you know, 30 seconds or so. And speaking of Ralphs, Matt, what you said. For a girl, like songs about a mutilated dove. Poor things out there still flying in circles. Yeah, here it is. The Michigan contingent checking in. Robin, says Micah, don't diss on Bob Seger. Well, I mean, there are some Bob Seger songs. I love Main Street. And the adolescent angst of Night Moves. Yeah. And, of course, well, nobody can hear old-time rock and roll without seeing a young Tom Hanks in a white dress shirt and tidy whiteys sliding on his socks across the hardwood floor singing. I will try to refrain for the rest of the program, Micah, from dissing on Bob Seger. I don't mean to, I'm not picking on Michigan. I could go ahead and mention that a long time ago when I was having my cup of coffee in law school, our dean was forever bragging about how he had sat on the commission in Michigan to revamp that state's legal ethics code. And my best friend at the time and I were working on our, when we were studying for finals. And of course, when you're studying for finals, that's when all the good ideas come along. And as we sat there in the Cracker Box Palace, the wind whipping through the pasteboard walls, one of us said, I swear to God, if he brings up that Michigan commission one more time. And we looked at each other, Michigan commission? Michigan commission? You take your pleadings to the courthouse about 7:45. Read opponent's answers, find your file too late. Forgot about the statute, now it's coming at you. Ooh, 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 brother, why'd you wait? And so we sat down, and instead of continuing to study for exams, we wrote a parody song called The Michigan Commission to the tune of Chattanooga Choo Choo and performed it for our classmates to much acclaim later, until the dean found out about it. And he wasn't particularly amused. That's about the only lyric I remember. You know, we've got a show to do here. We do. And by the way, it is Friday on the Front Porch. And so we will here in just a very short period of time go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Ferengi. And see what's on folks' minds, because God knows there's plenty of potential there. What all? That little kicker dude from the Kansas City Chiefs who has roiled so many people's anger. And he probably should not have accepted that opportunity to go to Benedictine College and unburden himself of his feelings about the women folk and how the LGBTQ community has an entire month dedicated to a deadly sin. Because the next thing you know, a woman was putting a video up on TikTok asking him, who, by the way, I went and looked at his... I went and looked at his Instagram feed. This guy who kicks footballs for a living and has a contract of some $22 million of dollars for doing so. And Matt in San Francisco, you're our subject matter expert on this. Could our den mother please check some images of the fella and see if any technology begins to make any sirens blare? Because, I mean, it takes a masculine man of masculine masculinity, manliness, to wear some of the suits he wears. I mean... And so a woman went on TikTok and posed the question, hey, what about that male cheerleader at Georgia Tech that you hooked up with? Ow, oops. You know, you miss one day of the week here, and it's like the whole week has flown by without you even knowing it. So apparently there's a... there's an open question as to whether... Well, no, some of these things aren't open questions. This dude, at one point in time, I guess felt so insecure that he went off to a conversion therapy camp that was touted by none other than Mother's husband, namely Mike Pencilneck Geek, to pray the gay away. And so now he's engaged in this performative butchness. That somehow isn't passing the smell test. Yeah. Oh, there's so much going on. But the thing about the kicker kerfuffle is that it's almost entirely driven by TikTok. I mean, I sat last night just scrolling, and it was like, holy cow, the number of TikTok shorts that I saw just roasting the Chiefs kicker. It was legion. And of course, when you go to a staunchly Catholic college, Benedictine College, somewhere in Kansas, and you sound off all masculine, manly, and masculinity, manliness, and talk about, I mean, this takes some noive. Ooh, you got a lot of noive. To blather on and on about how Roman Catholic priests are becoming too friendly with their parishioners, and yet at the same time blow past the number of priests who have engaged in the rape of children, especially when, oh, a search warrant was served on the entire Archdiocese of New Orleans recently for a massive cover-up of pedophilic rape. Yeah, no. So Harrison Butthurt talking about how women need to stay in the home, and that's what women's was made for. Yeah. That's problematic, especially when the woman who raised Harrison Butthurt is actually a renowned medical physicist for Emory University. Benedictine College is in Atchison, Kansas. Can you imagine what it must have been like to be a young woman just who had busted her butt for 4 years to get a good Roman Catholic college, rigorous academic degree, only to be told that it was worthless by a guy who kicks a football for a living? And you have to sit there. I'm surprised no women got up and walked out, but they're probably too ladylike, being as how they were going to Benedictine College and whatnot. And Harrison Butker decided that, well, goodness gracious, President Biden screwed up COVID. I had no idea Joseph R. Biden was president of the United States when COVID entered the United States of America. I could have sworn that was Nitwit Nero. Yeah. But I'm sure you all heard the quote by now.
I can tell you that my beautiful wife, Isabel, would be the first to say her life truly started.
Why, how egalitarian of Isabel's hubby to speak for Isabel.
When she started living her vocation as a wife and a mother, I'm on this stage today able to be the man that I am.
And I am.
Because I have a wife who leans into her vocation. I'm beyond blessed with the many talents God has given me.
You know, kicking a football.
But it cannot be overstated that all my success is made possible because a girl I met in band class back in middle school would convert to the faith, become my wife, and embrace one of the most important titles of all, homemaker.
Gag me with a crucifix. And they wonder why people are fleeing the church in droves. And so it came as no surprise whatsoever when that one video went up of the woman saying, hey, Harrison, what about that male cheerleader you had a hookup with back at Georgia Tech? Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, there's his Instagram page, which definitely looks like Queer Eye for the Queer Guy. Now, I mean, even with me, all those decades as a closeted trans woman, I would never have worn anything like that. That's like begging people to go, hey, you got something you need to tell us, hon? No, give me charcoal, navy blue, black, the occasional pinstripe, maybe a colorful tie. What? Matt says Harrison butt kicker. Okay, so I checked out his Instagram butt kicker. He looks more like a butt licker to me. Dead mother believes. Dot, dot, dot. He gay. Thank you for the confirmation, mother. We needed that, because I don't want to just run out there, but, And frankly, if there was, in fact, a male cheerleader at Georgia Tech University, I'm guessing the male cheerleader was probably more ripped, chiseled, and rock hard than a puny little kicker. A friend, because this is what happens when these cultural things blow up. A friend said, yeah, I remember his daddy made him go out for football, and he didn't want to, and he quit and cried after the first day because he didn't like being hit. Believe me, I can, that's valid. I played football for 3 years in high school. And it was awful, and I hated getting the crap knocked out of me. That's why Miss Terry and I became such good friends, standing over the over on the sidelines until it was time for us to go in and get our brains rattled, you know, by the first string. But then he found out that there were kickers, and decided maybe he could do that. And he wanted everybody to know that he's a racist, too. So he said, "The world around us says that we should keep our beliefs to ourselves whenever they go against the tyranny of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We fear speaking the truth because now, unfortunately, truth is in the minority." And what with this being May and June coming and June being Pride Month, not the deadly sin sort of pride that has an entire month dedicated to it, but the true God-centered pride that is cooperating with the Holy Ghost, boo, to glorify Him. Oh, for pity's sakes. Get back in the kitchen, bitches. Yeah, well, I did see somewhere someone said, you know, with this kick-ass U.S. soccer team, someone should go in and try out to be the Chiefs kicker, break the gender barrier in the NFL, and send Harrison Butthurt back to the kitchen. Yesterday was also the day when the NFL released, all the teams released their schedules. And and whoever does social media for the San Diego Chargers, well, cowbell. Because in announcing the San Diego Chargers schedule, they noted that they will, of course, be playing the Kansas City Chiefs. And put up an AI animation of Harrison Butker cooking and baking and cleaning in the kitchen. Yeah. Look, at least it was a break from the trial palaver. You know, the trial we don't get to watch, but only have to have described to us because we are far too innocent and childlike to be able to view the testimony for ourselves. Really, shame on the state of New York for that. And then I got up Thursday morning and noticed that only a couple of days after I mentioned our beloved Ford Fusion here, there was Joe going on and on about automobiles and how he, a man of the people, Jehoshaphat, toddles around in a 10-year-old gray Kia minivan and talked about the price of automobiles and, oh dear God, it's ridiculous. I had to go to the pharmacy early yesterday. And that's over in Somersville. And I had a minute, so just for the hell of it, I wandered onto the Ford lot, where I saw a Ford Expedition, which is about the size of a Sherman tank. Yeah, minus the really cool gun. Don't tell the NRA. They'll insist on guns. And this thing, it was beautiful. It was amazing. Looked really solid. It was huge. I would have had to have, I mean, I'm no shrinking violet, but I would have had to have a step stool to get into this thing. Leather everything, third row seating, You could carry probably an entire Roman Catholic family in it. And so just because I'm a glutton for punishment, I checked out the sticker on it. Who's buying these? 84,000 dollars. Mm-hmm. And I think it got, just like a Sherman tank, it got about 10 gallons to the mile. But I was kind of surprised by the fact that there was Jehoshaphat talking about Ford Fusions only a couple of days after I was talking about our Ford. And the Ford Fusion, which I've heard is a great car, he said, if they even make it anymore. And no, they don't. I'm sure it's all just coincidence. But if it isn't, hi Joe. Hi Mika. And by the way, there is a challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralphs, who put a $50 challenge forward. Ralphs follows a website called Tiny Kittens, and there are two precious little kitty cats, Eastmont and Charco, and two tiny kittens, cats awaiting to be adopted together. They're a package deal. And so, in celebration of them finding their forever home together, Ralphs has put a $50 challenge forward. If it's met, that will get us down to $12.35. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs. And we'll see how that goes. It would be wonderful if we could have a Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle. Oh, I am so sorry. I'm not a big follower of the No Fun League. They used to be the San Diego Chargers, but Kevin in Colorado Springs, just straightening me up, says they are not the San Diego Chargers. They are now known as the Los Angeles Chargers. You regret the error, right? I do. I regret the error. And we, for all have misheard the lyrics and come short of the glory of Chuck Berry, Matt in San Francisco said, confession, for the longest time I thought Steve Miller had a song about a big old jam at the lighthouse. The words, of course, are big old jet airliner. Which makes more sense, because a lighthouse isn't known for carrying people far away. It's better than what I thought it was. I thought it was Bingo Jet Had a Light On. Nah. There's a lot of those out there. At one point in time, and I'm just making my Stevie Nicks problem worse. In the Fleetwood Mac song, what is it, Dreams? I thought at some point in time Stevie Nicks was making a reference to a grouchy bear. A grouchy bear. I'm not making that up. And let's just find out what it is that I thought was a grouchy bear. I think it's like a heartbeat drives you mad. But somewhere in there, I heard Grouchy Bear. Maybe it was a sign. I heard that years ago. But it just kind of stuck. Because, you know, the whole cultural phenomenon of women being asked whether they would rather encounter a bear in the woods or an unknown man. And by far and away, women say, no, the bear. Definitely the bear. Well, Todd, I think you're right. Todd down in South Carolina stand said, Jehoshaphat is on to you. And he dropped a these you people this morning. He's been you peopling without it. I mean, he's got a bell. He you peoples. Talks about Ford Fusions. And there was a curious little moment this morning. You know, he's about, 2.5 months younger than me. And they were talking NBA and the playoffs and everything. And I realize there's an internet delay or something. Maybe I heard it subconsciously, but he was talking about, you know, the early days of the Bulls dynasty. And then his mind went to where my mind went, was that series with the Detroit. I swear to God, I'm not picking on Michigan this evening, but the Detroit Pistons, and at the same time, I'm thinking Bill Laimbeer, and he says Bill Laimbeer, and my brain says thug, and he says thug, and Eugene Robinson says, oh, they were definitely thugs. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies. You may be right, Todd. He may be on to me. On to us. By the way, I did probably neglect to mention that when we do go to the front porch here in just a very scant few minutes, there's a button at headon.live at the top of the page. All you got to do is click on it if you've never participated in the front porch before. It's a great deal of fun. We'd love to hear new voices. So feel free to jump in. Or just use Skype. That works too. But if you've never done the front porch before, probably the button at the top of headon.live. That's the simplest way of getting in. Funny you should bring up Butchness. Darlene in Connecticut says, at the grossly delayed Comer Pyle hearing to impeach Merrick Garland, Jasmine Crockett verbally punched back with such force at marginal Taylor Gangrene's weird eyelashes insult that there was nothing left but a smoldering white supremacist spot on the floor. Jasmine couched things as a point of order question to Comer Pyle, trying to understand how calling someone on the other side a bleach blonde, bad built butch body was not akin to engaging in personalities. One cannot engage in personalities in the House of Representatives. Innocently asked, and everyone knew who she was referencing, Comer didn't quite get the question. Atne ute aitbre, Comer Pyle, if you one what I ine. Jamie Raskin's and Dan Goldman's respective expressions for the ages, absolutely precious. It took me 24 hours. That Jasmine also did her loosely veiled insult of marginal as an alliteration. Bleach blonde, bad built butch body. We usually say that in regard to an illegitimate Supreme Court justice. And we got illegitimate Supreme Court justice stuff to talk about, too. Damn, she's good, Darlene said. Jasmine Crockett is not only gorgeous on the outside, but a brilliant and beautiful soul on the inside. No wonder marginal Taylor Gangrene is so jealous. I mean, Jasmine Crockett also has the nerve to be black while being beautiful. How dare she? Beauty's only supposed to be reserved to the white maggot girls on the other side, right? Not as they is some fugly on the outside and the inside. You know, beauty is only skin deep, but ugly goes clean to the bone. P.S. says, Darlene, I've been preoccupied these past few days and tuned in late. Did you beat the dead guy? Oh, fainting with damn praise. We are taking it as read that I did, by the narrowest of margins. Bleach blonde, bad built butch body. She'll learn not to mess with Jasmine, Marge. And wasn't it interesting that if you see the clip, the maggot men weren't exactly leaping to Marge's defense because, well, I mean, who would? Not I, said the little red hen. And it's now even become something being referred to as a diss track, the bleach blonde, bad built butch body remark. It's now a video, a music video. Yes. Let us cherish it.
Better understand your ruling. If someone on this committee then starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built butch body, bleach blonde, bad built butch body, 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 body,
body, body, body, body, body, body, body, body. Yeah, it's gone viral. As well it should. I think Jasmine Crockett has a long and storied career. This is her first term in Congress, and she's already in there kicking marginal trailer queen around like she owns her. And that was put forward by Representative Jared Moskowitz. He dropped the diss track. And AOC jumped in and slapped Marge around a little bit, telling her, "Oh, girl, baby girl, don't even play." Yeah, Jasmine Crockett is, in fact, a rock star. I mean, this is better than the P-word track from January 24th in the West Virginia legislature.
Just to better understand your ruling, if someone on this committee then starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built butch body, bleach blonde, bad built butch body, 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 body,
body, body, body, body, body, body, body, body, body, body. Oh, I think I need to save that for the future. I just do. But I was gratified to see, if for no other reason than for the sake of String Bean Boron, that his daddy actually showed up for his graduation today. There was even photographic evidence. Uh-huh. There was a photographer in present from the Associated Press at the Oxbridge Academy's football field in West Palm Beach, Florida. And the photo is getting a lot of attention. Melanoma, otherwise known as Barron's mother, actually sat beside him. People noting that she doesn't look very happy. Another person saying the exact opposite, only sarcastically. "They always look so happy," or "Melanoma looks miserable. I think she would pull that hat all the way over her face if she could. Poor Boron. Melanoma's trying to hide." She thought she was going alone. Melania wearing her hat like a gangster. Melanoma's daddy was there, and a lot of people mistook him for Bill Barr to prosecution. Woo! Melanoma attired beachily in a white skirt with a black tailored double-breasted navy blazer and a straw hat with the brim pulled, as Freddie Mercury might once have sung, with the brim pulled way down low. Mel stands steadily in the stands with her hat, with her brim pulled way down low. If I only had time, I'd finish the lyric. Anybody else want to work on it? From Another One Bites the Dust? Nitwit Nero showed up 2 minutes before the ceremony. And honestly, Melanoma's daddy does look, at least at a distance, like Bill Barr to prosecution. Melanoma's daddy. Daddy. Lee in New York, supportive wife, her first time seen with him since the trial began, of marginal trailer queen Darlene in Connecticut, said, "Marginal ain't never going to learn." She also said she has a pretty good body for turning 50. Observing, Darlene does, "Methinks someone is going through a midlife." Congratulations on winning your primary. You're in. One down. Jasmine's so good at this stuff, bad built could mean good or really bad. Butch is close to bitch. She's a trip. And AOC was apoplectic. Baby girl, lol. Hey, baby girl. But the thing is, I mean, Butch was doing a lot of work there. Because even if you don't make the leap to saying, "Hey, that's one vowel away from bitch," it stands alone as a word describing her as mannish. Jasmine Crockett, intentional or not, and I prefer to say intentionally, kind of did accuse marginal trailer queen of not being straight, you know, and her being a gym bunny and all. Oh, dear. You know, welcome to the middle of the third decade of the 21st century, y'all. We didn't think we were going to be here. We thought there'd be flying cars and helium-filled pants. All those things that Donald Fagan listed off in New Frontier. Let's see. How is it supposed to be by now, Mr. Fagan? Oh, wait, no, that's not New Frontier. That's IGY. Just machines to make big decisions. Well, we're close to that. On that train, all graphite and glitter, undersea by rail, 90 minutes from New York to Paris by 76 will be A-OK. Get your ticket to that wheel in space while there's time. The fix is in. Here at home, we'll play in the city, powered by the sun. Perfect weather for a streamlined world. There'll be spandex jackets, one for everyone. Just machine to make big decisions. Programmed by fellows with compassion and vision. We'll be clean when their work is done. We'll be eternally free. Yes, and eternally young. It didn't quite work out that way, did it? No. OSF, old Sporkfoot. She's outside the clubhouse looking in at this point, Steve, back in New York, says, and she hates it. I had a huge sautéed piece of schadenfreude today in celebration. Oh, shit, they really are Sporkfeet. Yes, they are Sporkfeet. God. And I mentioned, and then there's Sammy Bad Breath. Sometimes I feel like, well, I guess there's a benefit to having been doing something like this for as long as I have. I remember the confirmation hearings of Sammy Bad Breath when one of the biggest screw-ups that Robert C. Byrd ever made in his long and illustrious career was supporting Sammy Bad Breath, saying that he had received, and by the way, at the time, you know, this is the relatively immediate post-9/11 world, when you could not send a letter to your senator and get it to him or her in anything under 6 weeks. And there stood Robert C. Byrd talking about all the letters he had received from hard-working West Virginians and telling him that they trusted Sam Alito to protect religious liberty in the new 90 states of America, and how he knew they was real letters because they had coffee cup circles on the paper and a little bit of smears of that greasy donut sugar from down to the donut connection in Beckley. And some of us had the foresight to say, you know, this guy's going to be a real nightmare. And then there were the confirmation hearings where Mrs. Alito, I remember remarking at the time that she appeared to be dressed in couture made of the upholstery of a 1957 Edsel, and she sat there in the crying enraged tears at the very notion that someone would accuse or ask a question even about her beloved hubby. Being a right-wing authoritarian tool. Hmm? Yeah. And everybody, and it was a kerfuffle all day long. For a couple of days. The mean Democrats made poor, kindly Mrs. Alito cry. Well, now we find that, well, the Alito household, right smack dab around January the 17th, 2021, ran Old Glory up the flagpole upside down, which is according to the American Legion flag code, only to be done as a sign of the most extreme duress. And this, like I said, January 17th, 2021. The country was still reeling from the domestic terror attack of January 6th. And he proved himself a supporter of insurrection. because on January 6, 2021, when those domestic terrorists attacked the capital of the United States, the seat of government, and the very physical embodiment of constitutional governance in these United States, the maggots were flying the American flag upside down as a designation that the country was in distress because the election was stolen. Well, the flag code says the flag should never be displayed with the Union down, except as a signal of dire distress in instances of extreme danger to life or property. Now, Sammy Bad Breath threw Mrs. Alito under the bus, saying that, well, they flew it that way briefly because Mrs. Alito was upset that their neighbors had a sign that said, fuck Trump, in the yard.
There were children waiting for the bus that saw that word.
Oh, honey, they've heard that word a lot. Well, over on MSNBC, Andrew Weissman did a pretty good takedown.
Neighbor, that your instinct is to side with the insurrectionists is the rot.
Yeah, so first, let's just leave aside the story. I mean, you don't have to be a foreign prosecutor to just pick that apart. And I would say, thank God there was a photo, because if there wasn't a photo, the story would be it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. There's a million ways that the cover story is absurd in the way.
Well, hold on. Yeah, I agree with Andrew Weissman. Thank God there was a photo, but I no sooner saw it breaking on social media than I also immediately saw an entire string of maggots jumping in and saying, fake news, that's been photoshopped, it's so obvious, the shadows on the flag ain't right. That's AI.
That Mrs.
was,
Alito did it?
Yeah, and it's just like the responses to the ProPublica stuff. I mean, the responses made you just think these are the people who are deciding to overturn Roe versus Wade. I want to go to Dahlia's point because I think it's absolutely the right one. If you want to connect the image that you saw, you don't have to look far. If you look at what Alito said in the immunity argument, the argument was, should a president be subject to the criminal laws? And it was unbelievable. Somebody who was a U.S. attorney, who is now sitting in the Supreme Court of the United States, took the position, we cannot trust DOJ. We cannot trust a grand jury of citizens. We cannot trust the criminal justice system, which, by the way, he oversees the constitutional limits on what the government can do. We can't trust that. And that's why a president should be immune. And you tie that now to what you're seeing. This is a direct line in terms of what he espoused in the oral argument to the image that you are seeing. This is not like, oh, his wife just happened to be doing something, because you can tie it to his rhetoric and what his position is in the court.
Tim, have you talked about this image? I mean, I saw it and immediately remembered it because I sat here and anchored hours of live television on January 6th, and I was staring at what the insurrectionists were carrying. A lot of them were carrying Trump flags, which is the first image that I had, but a lot of them carried this image of the flag upside down. There it is. I had to Google it on that day. I didn't know what that meant, but this is in the view of the insurrectionists. These are insurrectionists waving this flag. This was their symbol that day.
And bear in mind, there were some of those flags that were pre-produced. They were produced to be flown upside down and in gold lettering across the top of the upside down flag, in other words, what would nominally be the bottom of the flag, "In God We Trust." This is absolutely repulsive. And, of course, it wasn't just, you know, Andrew Weissman who wasn't buying it, but, well, our friends at the Morning Zoo crew weren't having any of it either. Right out of the gate this morning.
Is American flag upside down?
No,
because the
he's
Red Sox
not.
Lost last night.
I did text that to you.
It was actually a neighbor.
No,
that you have Rays fan.
You're not.
That you're doing it for what?
Yeah, there are pictures taken. Red. Yes, yeah. We will get to it later this morning. But the Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito, American flag at his home hung upside down, source signal of distress, done in the days after January 6th. It was a symbol of the Stop the Steal movement, and it was hung at the Justice's house. He blames his wife.
You know, Willie, blaming the wife thing for people in public eye in trouble, that's going around.
Don't ever do that.
You know, I'm scared of you. I would never do that.
But, love
Willie,
me,
this circles back to these people, and I will say these people, these Trumpers, who have spent their entire life attacking people for being insufficiently patriotic, and then they lose, and they just hate America. They hate America. They're constantly going around saying how weak we are. They hate our military. They say how weak our military is when it's the strongest in the world. They hate our economy. They claim the president of the United States is a socialist. The Dow yesterday made all of these people a lot richer, breaking 40,000 for the first time, despite Donald Trump's lies that it would collapse if Joe Biden was president of the United States. They hate this country. They attack this country. The only time they love it is when their person is in office. And I just got to say, and we've got a lot of legal, brilliant minds around this table.
Yeah.
So they can speak to this later if they want to. I will tell you, growing up, one of my friend's fathers was a federal judge. I had no idea until I got older whether he was Republican or Democrat. And that was the case in Northwest Florida, a very conservative place. The federal judges kept themselves beyond reproach. They never talked politics, ever, in the privacy of their homes. If you ask them opinion, they would just say, not my job, right? I'm a judge. They actually took their oath seriously. And for a Supreme Court justice, and I will say my opinion only, but the guy most likely to have had something to do with the leaking of the Dobbs decision, leaking it to the Wall Street Journal, or somebody connected to him leaking it to the Wall Street Journal because he wanted to keep Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett frozen in place. I think history will show that. But that aside, for a guy who is a Supreme Court justice that let that happen at his own home in one of the most fraught times in American history since the Civil War, it's just sad. And it shows how little respect he has for the institution. It shows how little respect he has for the law. It really does. It's disgusting. It's just disgusting.
Willie.
And by the way, we can't overstate the timing of this, which is January 17th, 2021. Think about where we were as a country, still completely shaken by what had happened on January 6th. And a sitting Supreme Court justice has a flag flying upside down at his home that is a symbol of solidarity, as John said, with the Stop the Steal movement. We should explain a little bit here. The New York Times is reporting that a photo of an American flag outside the home of Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito has now been made public, the flag flown upside down. As the Times notes, the inverted flag has become a symbol of Trump supporters who claim, again, without evidence, that the 2020 election was stolen. Reading from the piece now, quote, the upside-down flag was aloft on January 17, 2021, the images showed. President Donald J. Trump's supporters, including some brandishing the same symbol, had rioted at the Capitol little over a week before. Mr. Biden's inauguration was 3 days away. Alarmed neighbors snapped photographs, some of which were recently obtained by the New York Times. While the flag was up, the court was still contending with whether to hear a 2020 election case, with Justice Alito on the losing end of that decision. In coming weeks, the justices will rule on two climactic cases involving the storming of the Capitol on January 6, including whether Mr. Trump has immunity for his actions. Their decisions will shape how accountable he can be held for trying to overturn the last presidential election and his chances for re-election in the upcoming one. I had no involvement whatsoever in the flying of the flag, Justice Alito said in an emailed statement to the Times. It was briefly placed by Mrs. Alito in response to a neighbor's use of objectionable and personally insulting language on yard signs.
Wait, so you're going to hate on America because of something a neighbor did?
You're going to blame your wife?
Right. And blame
you're
your wife?
That excuse?
My wife was mad at a neighbor. Blaming wives.
Why is anybody surprised that he blamed his wife? That's kind of what I want to know. Does anybody, I mean, we did read the leaked draft of the Dobbs decision that he wrote. I know we did. We talked about it extensively. And then we read the actual decision, which was not much different at all, in which Sammy Bad Breath actually cited one of the judges who sent women to their death during the Salem witch trials in the 17th century, right? This is perfectly in character for Sammy Bad Breath. He despises women. The Dobbs decision is an abundant proof of that, as if we need it anymore. But his entire career is predicated on jurisprudential declarations of his hate for women. But what's mind-blowing is that he was actually in the decisional process as to whether or not to grant relief in one of the lawsuits that made it to the Supreme Court trying to stop the count in the 2020 election, trying to actually perpetrate the steal on behalf of Donald J. Trump. And the thing that I've been thinking about ever since this story broke is that he should immediately recuse himself from any consideration of the Trump immunity case, as should Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas, the world's most prominent and perhaps only living, walking, talking human timeshare, owned in part here and there by folks like Lee Lee and Har Har. They've no business on the case. It should be decided by at most 7 members of the court. And it should be decided promptly. I know we're all supposed to believe that everybody on the Supreme Court of the United States is so friendly, and we remember that, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and fat dead Tony Scalia love to sit down for some tea and crumpets and talk about opera. Y'all, my aching back. If Associate Justices Ketanji Brown Jackson, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor are not raising hell every day, well, I mean, they're out of session now. But when are we going to release this decision? When are we going to release this decision? When are we going to release this decision? And the thing is, neither of those two men have any business on this case. Their biases are clear. If they were on the United States Circuit Court of Appeals, if they were on the federal district court level, there is a judicial ethics commission that would yank them off the case. But because we have engaged in this fallacy that the members of the Supreme Court of the United States are so far above reproach that they can be trusted to police themselves and their conduct as to when they should or should not recuse, Well, here we damned well are. And they're going to sit on that case, and they're going to do everything they possibly can to make sure that these trials do not, these federal trials do not come to fruition. And as such, the trial in New York, the one he skipped today, anything to buy a day, becomes so much more critically important. Because only the governor of the state of New York, if he is convicted, can save him from going to prison. That's it. As to Nitwit Nero attending Beanpole Barron's graduation today, Steve sent this along. Yes, he went, but Trump's used Barron's graduation as his can. These paragraphs come from the ABC News article. I pasted the first two for context. The third one is the best one. Trump has used Barron Trump's graduation as his campaign message and that fundraising opportunity, repeatedly blasting the judge in the hush money trial for forcing him to skip his family's important moment, although the judge had not ordered that before the judge allowed him to take the time off of the trial. Trump uses similar rhetoric to claim that the court schedule is keeping him off the campaign trail during a critical period of the election cycle, though earlier this week he used Wednesday, his usual day off from the trial, to fundraise with wealthy donors in Ohio and Kentucky. On Tuesday, after court, Trump attended another high-dollar fundraiser in Manhattan. And on Friday, today, Trump is not sticking around in Florida to spend the rest of the day with his family. He's flying out to Minnesota to headline the Minnesota Republican Party's Lincoln-Reagan Gala fundraiser in a state he and his campaign have recently been targeting in an effort to expand the battleground map. There we go. Steve also says, I don't agree that's what he means, that he's blaming his wife. I think he means his mother. Ew. Oh, and thank you to Henry. Thank you, Henry, so very much. Henry got us started, and so we are now $1,235 away from being fully funded for the week. We are $35 away from being fully funded for last Friday. And I need to get the water company, the power company, and the phone company off my back. And, you know, things like paying for health insurance and the lot. So, any help is good help. If we could finish Friday, that would be fantastic. Super duper. And, the PayPal button's at headon.live. Oh, and I have filler-oxtered. Well into the program this evening. My apologies. There was just a heck of a lot of stuff to get. I know, Brother Deacon, you're over filler-rockstering Ms. Kincaid. It's bad for the environment, plus you're silencing the Horn Family Community Congregation waiting in the Skype chat. Well, let's get right to it. And by all means, do please connect. And we'll go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Orcs, and wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that we gather around each and every Friday and see what's on folks' minds. I really did over filler-oxter. Sorry about that. Oh, there we are. Okie doke. Hey, Roger, you there? Oh, Roger. Roger's unmuting right now.
Whoops. Sorry about that.
All better.
I was shutting down the horn feed, so I didn't get the echo in my headphones. Are you getting a background hum like an air conditioner or something of that sort?
Not that's noticeable.
Okay. I've got
a background air conditioner noise that might be bothering other people.
Well, I'm running my freeze dryer right now getting prepped for a presentation I'm giving next week. And if it was a problem, then I'd just start the call and back right out.
Oh, you're fine.
But those upside-down flags with the – In God We Trust written on the bottom panel, upside down kind of thing?
Yeah. Only those words were right side up.
Correct. Yeah, I got that. But obviously they couldn't have had them made before, because the group on January 6th was simply a bunch of tourists out expressing a dissatisfaction. There wasn't any ill intent toward Congress.
Right, and they had nothing to display distress about up until January, because Trump was still president, right?
Correct, and they weren't even going to hold the vote until later in the day for the count the Electoral College votes. So obviously you're just wrong, Robin. That's all it is.
I have to be. I just have to be.
Now, another
probably just a hysterical woman, Roger.
Yeah, well, I live with one, so whatever. But anyhow, an interesting kind of a fun story. Back about 1958, in the little town of Arcata, when the police department was still on the plaza in an old library building, I happened to be walking around the plaza and saw the flag on the flagpole upside down. And I knew that it was the police department that ran the flag up every day and took it down every night. So I walked over to the police station and asked them how come the flag was flying upside down. And they basically tried to throw me out and tell me I was stupid, all that kind of stuff, because I was only in about seventh grade. And I said, no, go out, walk out and look at it. Desk sergeant got up, walked out and looked at it. And I remember him hearing him say, oh, shit, and turned around, walked back in. And about 3 minutes later, a cop car pulled up and some cops jumped out, lowered the flag, put it back up correctly. So
somebody was still half asleep when they ran it up the flagpole to see if anybody would salute.
Yeah, something like that. And also in my listening around, I forget where it was I caught, but it was on one of the programs I watch, that there was a person on, I think it was on MSNBC, and was trying to make the case that Joe Biden on January 21st should have pardoned Trump as Ford
did with Nixon. Yeah, that was Bishop Willard Romney.
Yeah, that's right. It was Romney that went through the whole long song and dance, because it would have saved the country from so much divisiveness that we are going through over the trial of Donald J. Trump. And I was kind of upset that the moderator didn't point out to him that just maybe Donald J. Trump has this idea of presidential immunity and only did what he did because Gerry Ford pardoned Nixon. And had Nixon stood trial, as he should have, that no future president would even be tempted to push the boundaries. And what's really scary to me is this Project 2025 is a clear pushing of the boundaries if Trump is to get reelected.
Oh, so, yeah, the thing is, Roger, if the Supreme Court does not shut this down peremptorily and give us bright line declarations, you know, black letter law, then this is going to continue to bedevil us.
Correct. And I mean, an argument could be made that LBJ fought the Vietnam War extra legally, and Korea could even be considered kind of extra legally, except for the argument that Congress appropriated the money to fund Vietnam, so they implicitly declared war, and all kinds of other little arguments. To me, it really all boils down, and I've said this before, if Abraham Lincoln hadn't been so soft on the South, none of this shit would be going on.
I think you're absolutely right. But then again, to be fair, Roger, Abraham Lincoln didn't get much of a chance to be soft on the South. What, Lee surrendered on April 5th and John Wilkes Booth took Lincoln down on April 15th?
Yeah, you're much better at the dates than I am.
The culprit was Andrew Johnson. That's who the
yes.
culprit was. Who basically shut down Reconstruction. Fucker.
Well, to be fair, Steve, he didn't shut down Reconstruction. That was Rutherford B. Hayes.
Okay. That was that horse trading. You get elected as long as you shut down Reconstruction.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
Because the election was thrown into the House.
The House. Okay.
Gotcha. And the contest was between Samuel Tilden and Rutherford B. Hayes. And because of that bargain, because of that conspiracy, Rutherford B. Hayes became president of the United States. And isn't it interesting that that's the only thing that we really remember about Rutherford B. Hayes? The real tragedy of it all, and Ken Burns, who can sometimes be problematic, but Ken Burns did one of his documentaries on James Garfield. Garfield's assassination and his subsequent replacement by Chester A. Arthur, is a tragedy, because Garfield had it in his head that he wanted to finish Lincoln's work, and he wanted to extend notions of freedom and equality. And whereas John Wilkes Booth murdered Abraham Lincoln specifically for the purpose of trying to stop the defeat of the South, Garfield was just murdered by a nut job with a gun. And in point of fact, he wasn't really murdered by a nut job with a gun. The bullet didn't do nearly as much damage to Garfield as, say, the bullet that struck old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Garfield was killed, and as a lawyer, Garfield was killed by medical malpractice. Because he lingered for a very long time, during which doctors experimented on him, and I'm not saying this for any reason prurient or anything like that, but they tried to feed him rectally. And when I say feed him rectally, I mean like ground up mashed potatoes and roast beef. And that, and infection, is what finally got him. So there's that. Did I run you away, Steve?
No, I'm here. I just, when I'm not talking, I always go on mute.
Okay. Yeah. But does that make sense to you?
Yeah, makes perfect sense. You know, it's weird. You know, you go back in history.
I know I am.
That's without saying. But history seems, so many things seem to just change. I don't find there are huge things. I mean, sometimes there are big things that change history. But it seems like the little things that really take history off the rails or really change the direction of history.
I don't know if he was a historian or a philosopher or a sociologist, but and I can't even place how far back in time it was. I think Dr. Bill was still on the air with us at the time. But this person came up with this theory that it's not the great big groundbreaking events that wind up changing history. It's little tiny things like a disaffected disaffected, derpy revolutionary from Serbia named Gavrilo Princip.
Mm-hmm.
He started World War One. And in fact, there's a there was a poet that I studied in school. How is she going to tie this one in? And it stuck with me all these years, who said, it's not the great big events that drive a person mad. It's the relentless onslaught of little tiny annoyances. And he lists things that drive him bananas, and one of them was forgetting to turn in the invoice for that check from the Rotting Plank Review of Literature. And I think it stuck in my head that way because I remembered it when I was in law school, when I came out one day and it was snowing and it was bitterly cold, and it was the day of the 100 days party, which I don't know if other law schools do it, but you know, when the third year class has 100 days to go, there's this huge bash. And it was my best friend's 100 days party, and I had come out to the parking lot to find out that someone had flattened not one but two of my tires. And so we went off in a mad dash in his orange Volkswagen Beetle, and I remember him saying, "You know, you can let half the air out of these tires and go anywhere in snow." And so we found ourselves having to drive all the way from Morgantown, West Virginia, down to Fairmont to try to find somewhere to buy two tires for my Nissan pickup truck. And I just remember thinking of that poem and that phrase, the invoice for the Rotting Plank Review.
We have a new member with his hand up.
Oh, that's Wave. Hey, Wave.
Hey, Robin. How's it going?
Well, hey, Carl. How are you?
Good. Just poking through all the hellish things that you might have talked about that I missed. I'll have to wait and listen on the podcast. Regarding Garfield.
Yes.
And the food situation.
Yes.
What I heard was the chicken got through, but it's when they started putting that ham in that caused them problems.
Oh, Carl. Gnid gnod.
But you know what? I wanted to talk about Elon Musk. He really pissed me off today. Big time. When he said, prosecute Fauci.
Oh, he's been on that for a while.
I mean, what the hell? That's insane. It's really just terrible the way these people are. It really drives me nuts. I'm sure you talked about Trailer Park Queen.
Oh, her and Harrison Butthurt. By the way, Micah said, someone should remind that jackass that when women play football, they usually play his position. I think Harrison Butthurt really is the perfect moment for a talented woman who's a kicker to break the NFL gender barrier. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah. Who's that really good women's soccer player?
Megan Rapinoe?
Yeah, I would love to see her.
You know, there's several really good women's soccer players, Steve.
But I'm saying she's the one who gets, who's, you know what I mean? That's, I just meant the one who's, who everyone seems to know except me. I would just love to see it.
This is the moment.
It's been the moment.
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah. Listen, I played hockey with women. I helped. There is a women's hockey league that I don't get any credit for it anymore, but I helped set up the entire league. Believe me. Women can be just as badass as anybody. I've seen it.
Oh, without a doubt. you know, all those men that say, you know what, I could take a serve from Serena Williams.
Good. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Let's see you do that.
Go right ahead and do that. Go right ahead.
I would.
Bobby Riggs learned a little bit about that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I would not stand on the court and take a serve from Serena Williams without the full suit of powered armor from Fallout.
Or even Martina Navratilova, who seems to have really fallen off the fallen into with TERFs.
Yeah, she is. She's a TERF, and it's terrible. And by the way, hey, thank you to Christopher. Christopher jumped in and said, Villa Robinster Fridays. Yes, thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much. Hey, y'all, it's a big deal. It's a ram-a-lama ding-dong for Christopher because we're finally fully funded for a week ago today. We are fully funded for last Friday. Last week is fully funded. And so now all we've got is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and today. In other words, $1,200 to go.
I don't know if you saw it, Robin, but I have a little update for the horn. Evidently, Marshall is supposed to go to the hospital this week. And right when they're going to bring her heart rate jumped to 170 and stayed there.
Oh, no.
So now she's in an ICU for heart problems right now.
Oh, and you're talking about, of course,
John's wife.
Yeah, John Britovo's beloved wife.
Yep.
How's John doing?
I don't know. His wife doesn't sound like she's doing great. I mean, like I said, she just got admitted last night for a heart rate of 170.
That was last night?
Oh, no, I just meant I heard you say that. I was wondering how is he faring with it.
He's a mess.
He's pretty quiet.
Yeah. I thought maybe my days are running together, but I thought she was headed. I thought she was going to the well. I just hope she's okay. I hope she gets okay.
Robin?
Yes, Ben.
Jeremy said something about in the chat, and then I heard you guys. What the hell did my field goal kicker say?
Oh, Harrison Butthurt? He went up to this Roman Catholic college in Kansas and declared that being gay is a deadly sin and that Pride Month shouldn't exist and that the highest calling of any woman is to stay home, clean house for her man, and treat her uterus like a clown car and spit out babies.
Oh, my God.
How do you live out there and you miss that? You're a Chiefs fan.
I didn't see it on my local news or nothing. That's weird.
Think you'll be looking for work anytime soon?
It was so bad, Ben, that the No Fun League issued a statement, and this was really kind of some weak tea, in which they said, well, Harrison Butker's statement was a strictly private statement and does not in any way reflect the values of the No Fun League. I would have far preferred get out, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. Good luck playing in Canada. Of course, if he'd said that in Canoodlia, that probably would have qualified as hate speech, wouldn't it? I mean, it's hate speech here.
I don't think it would have. That's kind of a weird concept up there. I've done a fair amount of like trying to figure it out.
What?
And I think if it doesn't encourage some sort of violence against a group, or it implies it, then it probably doesn't.
Because
again, you know how I feel about that.
Is it no crowd? No.
Oh, good. Thank you, Jeremy.
One of my issues with particularly with Canada is that the government can suspend the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. That's part of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So, but that's a whole other issue. It's a whole other issue, and they're about to elect a conservative government. So,
Robin, can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, the chief said anything?
Not much.
I mean, I think they're going to show him the door, no?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. A clip surfaced of Patrick Mahomes, I think, talking to Pat McAfee. Yeah, it was. He was interviewed by Pat McAfee. And for some reason, McAfee gets these guys to talk. And Mahomes said, listen, I sit next to him in team meetings all season long. I speak to him once at the beginning of the season and once at the end of the season. So apparently this guy's a real wackadoodle in the clubhouse, too.
Yeah. He's all done.
He's damn. Done.
I mean, he's pretty good, but, you know, there's lots of good kickers out there.
Is he good enough for the Kansas City Chiefs to decide that?
Hang on.
Well, is he good enough for the Kansas City Chiefs to absorb losses from being picketed and boycotted and having their brand go in the garbage?
No.
Yeah, I think.
Because this guy is such a fuckwit.
I think before the weekend's over, he'll be gone.
That's, I don't agree.
No, there's a contract involved, Kevin.
Yeah.
There'd have to be some sort of a buyout or a trade.
Guaranteed, though, right?
That's the thing. Yeah, a lot of them are. He's very good.
I know he's good. I'm not saying that away from him.
But the question is, what kind of a fuckwit do you have to be to go and insult not just one group, but multiple groups?
I wonder if he's Catholic.
Oh yeah, he's really Catholic.
No, he's not, because he got the teaching completely wrong. I won't get into that, but that's not what he said. Was not the teaching of the church at all.
That's one of those moments right there where he should have kept his comments to himself.
Oh, but he was last year he got a taste of fame, for lack of a better term, as if he wasn't famous enough for being a kicker. He got a taste of fame because he was invited to come and give the commencement at some other school. And so this year he gets the commencement invitation for this little bitty Benedictine college. I read Benedictine, and the first thing I thought of was, you know, B&B. I thought of liqueur. Benedictine and brandy.
Well, you know, basically what he just did by doing that, he put his own foot in his mouth.
Oh, he most assuredly did. And now the weirdo right-wingers are saying, he's being persecuted for whatever happened to free speech in the new 90 states of America.
But keep in mind, Robin, those are the same weirdos that are showing up to Trump rallies with signs that real men wear diapers and wearing the fucking diapers.
Yeah, well, yeah, Jeremy, and it's you know, that's another one of those cases where the two Venn diagrams are just one circle. Right wingers are just so goddamn weird. But Micah says, yeah, he's absolutely Catholic. He may not be espousing Christ's teachings, but no level of the Catholic Church is going to say shit about it. Yes, you should, Micah. Just join the damn call.
He is Catholic, and the Benedictine College said that he does not represent their views.
Yeah, oh, the Benedictine nun said, oh, no. No, no. They issued a lengthy statement. Absolutely lambasting him.
And along those lines, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about this, given that I'm kind of the resident Catholic here. Look, for all the stuff people think that the men run the church, if anybody actually thinks that, go to a church sometime, and you'll see who's in charge. We used to have a nun at my church, and I can't tell you how many times somebody would ask the pastor about something, and he would say, ask Sister Luz. That's who run it. That and gay men.
You mean when the Pope's... You and the Pope's going to start dancing, you know, break out in a square dance?
Well, and it's interesting you mentioned the Pope there. He recently made a statement, and this, you know, he's like a pilgrimage to Mecca, one step forward and two steps back. He gave an interview with 60 Minutes on April 24th that airs this weekend, this Sunday, in which he said that the Roman right-wing critics inside the Roman Catholic Church in the United States have a suicidal attitude. He said, because one thing is to take tradition into account, to consider situations from the past, but quite another is to be closed up inside a dogmatic box. You know, this from a guy who still says that the vagina havers can't be priests. I mean, but...
First of all, it's not him to say on that issue. Number one, you know, there's this notion that he's the Pope and he can do anything. I didn't want to do this, but this notion that
Father, let this cup pass by me if it be thy will.
Yeah. You know, if there are, he has to deal with factions. You know, whatever you think, the church, let's be frank here, is a 2,000-year-old behemoth.
Yeah.
And it's like a ship that's been going in a certain direction for 2,000 years. You can't just pull the brakes. Sometimes you have to, you know, and again, it's not as far as I would like, but I can also look at, in a fairly short period of time, you have a guy has taken this behemoth, old, entrenched has changed, I think, direction as much as can be expected. But there's two things that I like about him in particular. One, because I never thought I would see it in my lifetime, the Holy See is more liberal than the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Dang.
Which is funny to see. And two, and I think I told you about this, we had an exhibit at my church where it was various folks did their, it was an LGBT-centered exhibition. And we had, one of the exhibitions was from a trans person. And a person wrote, apparently it was a little itty-bitty label on the exhibit saying, God is trans. And they got demonstrations. They had the New York Post came into the church and they actually asked a friend of mine what he thought about it, and they completely misquoted him. His response was he hadn't seen it yet. He says, "Well, I don't really know what to think about it. I haven't seen it yet." Well, they didn't take the "I haven't seen it yet." But anyway, there was potential violence, so they had to take it that little label down. And I went into church one day, and I'm looking at it. I'm finally went to the pastor. I said, "What? I don't understand. What's the part? I didn't see. I couldn't figure out what the controversy was." He says, "Well, we had to take it down because we had to take that little piece off because of violent death threats and shit like that." And then I'm trying to think what the context was. Oh, our old pastor was in Rome, and he was talking to the Pope. And he brought up to Francis what happened. And Francis's response was to wave his hand and say, "Oh, there are, how did he say it? There's Pharisees all over the church." And that was the other thing that, look, if you know anything about history and who the Pharisees were, what he was saying was, to hell with those people. They're everywhere. So,
oh, you mean the poor you have always with ye?
No, he was saying that.
No, but I mean, it's in that same vein. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, there's always going to be Pharisees. You know what? Just ignore them. So, you know, and the other thing, too, is about gays in the church. I'm like, you know, let me tell you, so I got news for you. If you think we don't need the gays in the church, I got news for you. That's who runs. It's the nuns and the gays. That's who run it. Anyway, soapbox adorned with gold and little crucify or crucifixes. Sorry, back under my desk. So I apologize.
Yeah, crucifixes.
Yes.
Going back to those little things that drive us crazy. Irish Dave points out, you think? Nibbled to death by ducks is a phrase meant to describe afflictions not as serious as being shot at in combat or caught in a burning house, but nevertheless a series of small afflictions that in the end result in major catastrophe, at least inside one's own psyche. There we go. That's it. That's the one. And Dave adds, if real men wear diapers, where can we get our MASA hats? Make America shit again. Oh! Well, that's what the maggots will do, you know, if we can just get Biden across the finish line. Oh, I hate to miss a perfectly good right-wing kerfuffle. And anytime you see the name Mike Lindell in a headline, you know there's a kerfuffle on the way. Mr. Meth Pillow is now having a hissy. Did y'all, and I don't know if she's listening or not, but I'm sure Jessica knows this up in the greater Rochester metropolitan co-prosperity sphere. But I had no idea until I read of this kerfuffle that Minnesota has changed its state flag. Y'all, are y'all aware of this?
No.
They did, because the previous flag design had overtones of the, well, the theft of land and the displacement and the attempted genocide of indigenous Americans in what is now Minnesota. And so Minnesota decided, you know, hey, our flag design did not come down on tablets from Mount Sinai. Let's have a new flag. And so they designed this new flag, and the theme for the new flag is the North Star, because Minnesota identifies, God, really, with the North Star. I mean, remember the hockey team, you know, it used to be the Minnesota North Stars. And so they came up with this, I think, pretty flag that's got a dark blue shape that looks like Minnesota on the left, and it's got a white eight-pointed star on it, the North Star. And on the right, there's a light blue part of the field that symbolizes the, you know, 10,000 lakes, you know, Minnesota, land of 10,000 lakes. And so that's the new flag. Well, no, it's not. Not according to Mr. Meth Pillow, who picked up and amplified the words of a right-wing maggot goon named Jacqueline Toberoff. You may have heard of her, Steve. She at one point ran for New York City Council and lost. And so according to Mr. Meth Pillow and Jacqueline Toberoff, it's an Islamic star. They've turned Minnesota into a Muslim Sharia state.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's so utterly ludicrous that it just makes your brain kind of burn.
Hey, I just posted a flag in the thing, and Roger did. I saw both of these. Do we know which one it is? And what the fuck is an Islamic star? They use a crescent moon.
Yeah, well, they do, but some Muslim countries have an eight-pointed stars, a star. You know, Israel has Israel has a six-pointed one. Some Islamic countries have an eight-pointed one. And so Jacqueline Toberoff went on that rickety podcast that's run by the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells and said, "That's an Islamic flag. They decided to raise this Islamic flag. They told Marines and the deputy chief of staff of the Minnesota GP that it was to reflect the new immigrants who are Somali Muslim. Minnesota has been conquered. It is now Islamist, and that's what's going on." Oh my God! All those poor Lutherans out there making Minnesota hot dish and stuff, and not knowing that they have to make it halal now. Those poor Lutherans.
Oh my God! You know they think Minnesota's in place, so this is like a perfect.
Kevin, you're absolutely right. I'll bet Nitwit Nero's barking and grunting for all he's worth, even now. And now, this state, if we don't win this state, it's going to be an Islamic state. And all those churches, those beautiful Lutheran and Catholic churches, they're beautiful. Believe me, they're going to be turned into mosques, and they'll be bellowing those Muslim prayers from it all hours of the day and night. And Christians will be persecuted.
They take that loose thread, and they'll fucking pull it all summer long.
I couldn't.
They're going to ban our ice fishing.
Hi, Christopher. Yeah. Next.
Hi. Yeah. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday. How's
stop? Keeps going and going.
How's the young lad?
Oh, he's good. He's going to be making noise. He's got his little noisemaker thing. He loves toys that
squeak.
Do the crinkle.
He stems.
Yeah. Does the golden one have those toys too? The ones that crinkle? Crinkle noise?
I've looked at the crinkly toys, but I just have a feeling that no sooner do I drop $10 on that, he'll have it shredded inside of 5 minutes. He can't help it. He's an aggressive chewer. But he has a silicone jelly stick with a lot of dimples and indentations on it, and it squeaks. And he will misplace it from time to time. And he will come to us and go, "Help me, please. We're stuck. I walked in the door this afternoon, and he was barking, and it was his happy bark, and I said, "Hello, Shadow. Auntie's home. Is that my Shadow?" And this bark comes back to me going, "Yup, yup, yup."
I got to figure out, I've got to block off the couch so crap doesn't roll underneath the couch because it drives me crazy. He does the same thing. He's like, "Aren't you going to get that?" He rolls something under there and it's like,
"What kind of dad are you? I'm feeling abused."
Yeah, really? Good are you?
Where's my crinkly thing? Yes, Steve, go ahead.
I just did a search. There are no countries that are Muslim countries that have an eight-pointed star. This is just.
And they're even more full of shit than we thought.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm looking at it, what it is. You know, what do you call this? There's the star that has the north, south, east, west. What this is it's two of those on top of each other turned. So it's, you know, it's north and then in the middle or north and then the middle is northwest. And then,
you know what? I'm
trying to make logic out of something.
No, I know. And what you're describing is, I think, also known as a compass rose.
Yeah, because the other one that I had found that I thought might have been the flag, it's got the same thing, but each thing is not equally long. It's the same star with each point. You know what? I can't even believe we're talking. By the way,
get the swirly straw and your Jeroboam of rock gut tequila and have at it.
I mean, I put a diaper in there that I found in the chat where it's a gold diaper with a big blue T. I don't think that's photoshopped.
No, it's probably I remember when we first. You can buy them on Amazon. Unpaid product placement. Thank you, Jeremy. We are now down to $1,180 to get caught up. Thank you so much, Jeremy. We got about an hour, and if we could knock down the water bill or the phone bill or anything, it's all great. So thank you. Thank you.
I'll
Jeremy.
Do a $10 challenge. Sorry, I can't do more.
You know how you get after me when I apologize for doing those stories?
Okay.
Yeah.
Point taken.
Hey, Robin, $10 challenge. A couple things missing on the flag, though, would be a Viking, the image of the Gemini twins, and a howling timber wolf. If they added those, then that would make it work better.
An indigenous design. Yeah. But, I mean, it's not bad as it is. I mean, Randy Radar said it is a beautiful new flag. Also adding, did Randy Radar... Don't step on stick. Yeah. Oh, what have I done?
I'm surprised they skipped over. They skipped over what this really could have been. They skipped right past the morning star, you know, the brightest star, the fallen star, Lucifer. Well, right to Muslims.
Well, the one thing I see about that flag is a new, fresh approach that probably will not offend anybody unless they're absolute nutcases, and then they'd be offended no matter what the fuck the flag
is. Well, right, Roger, and the fact of the matter is it's a pretty flag, and the first thing I thought of when I saw it after it had been run up the flagpole to see if anybody would salute, and they did, when the breeze catches it, it kind of picks up this sort of, I don't know, groovy tie-dye kind of Grateful Dead vibe.
Or the Northern Lights.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there you go. Well, remember, these people's outrage butthurt machine has a direct hookup to that of, you know, Steve Bannon, Little Benny Shapiro, Steve Crowder, it's directly linked.
Yeah,
so
that's where they get it from. Right. The maggots in the right wing at this point in time is nothing but a great big outrage machine.
Okay, they're saying that it looks like the Somali flag.
And the problem is, Carl, it doesn't.
I know, and they're pissed off because there's a large Somalian population in Minnesota.
Oh, they've been hating on them for a long time, and of course the focus of their hatred in that regard is Ilhan Omar.
Right.
How dare they do democracy and have the unmitigated gall to... And before that, they were pissed off at Keith Ellison because when he was sworn in as a member of Congress... He went to the Library of Congress, and they kindly loaned him Thomas Jefferson's copy of the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
Because Thomas Jefferson had a copy of the Quran.
He took the oath of office on it.
Yeah.
He swore on his Quran, not the fucking Bible.
No.
Tell that to your Christian friends.
Keith Ellison took the oath of office on the Quran.
Oh, I thought Jefferson did too.
I don't think so.
All right, research department.
And you know what people actually were saying about that? That the Constitution requires you to take the oath on the Bible.
Because that's they're dum-dums.
Yeah, it's like stupid. You know what? I don't know how they sit down being that butthurt.
You know, Thomas Jefferson.
They use Mike Lindell's My Pillow to comfort their ass with their butt that butthurt.
Yeah, what? Which reminds me, we'll leave this alone going forward, but I did want to make mention of this because I'm an old. When I first saw the story breaking about Harrison Butthurt, the first thing I thought was, Jesus jumping Christ, who wrote this for him? Bill Donahue? Does that resonate with anybody, the name Bill Donahue?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yes, because nobody likes him. Nobody likes him. That's why it resonates. It's,
you know, who that is.
It's him and that mouse in his pocket are the only people who are have anything to do with that organization.
Help me out. Who is that?
He's a reactionary Catholic.
He's an asshole who out of whole cloth created something called the Catholic League, which was basically, and this is a long time ago now, basically just him and a typewriter. And he would issue these screeds decrying queer people, decrying hell,
anybody.
Protestants, yeah, decrying other Catholics who weren't Catholic enough for him. This is the guy who started the frenzy over Robert Mapplethorpe's Piss Christ.
Oh, I remember that. Oh, he was the one that was all bitching about that? I do remember that.
Yeah. No, I don't think that was...
Didn't
Louis Farrakhan hold on something? Didn't he get all mad about that? I don't know.
But Donahue also...
that's him in all his glory, huh?
Yeah, Bill Donahue also started the butt-hurtery over Chocolate Jesus.
I was just going to say Chocolate Jesus, which frankly was probably a little bit tasteless given when they had it on display. But really, that's where you're hanging your hat.
Yeah, well, I mean, Chocolate
I'm Jesus. Sure it was tasty, not tasteless.
Yeah, I was going to say that was for Steve. It may have been unintentional, but it was still a Rama Lama Ding Dong. A Chocolate Jesus being tasteless? Huh, I've never had such chocolate. I mean, okay, the white chocolate loincloth was probably tasteless because, frankly, I don't think white chocolate has much flavor. But that kerfuffle was so bad that the artist who did it had to flee for his life.
Well, like they wanted to Salman Rushdie him?
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a hell of a lot of difference between Bill Donahue and, you know, your average Iranian mullah. And then, of course, there's the artist who did the Madonna painted in elephant dung.
Oh.
They are such dainty little snowflakes. Dainty,
fragile. And then
there
was a crucifix
fragile,
and a bottle of urine.
That's Piss Christ.
That was a Piss Christ. Piss Christ, Robert Mapplethorpe.
Yeah, that's literally
that was in
what...
Cincinnati.
Was he mad at the person that prayed the Holy Son, Father, and the Holy White Toast? You know, the picture of Jesus on the toast?
Nah, he never threw a fit about that, because, you know, that happens every time somebody puts a piece of toast in a toaster in, you know, Tanistan.
So wait, if we can't have Chocolate Jesus, are they gonna ban all chocolate bunnies on Easter?
Well,
really,
I do
upsetting.
Hope maybe at some point we will come to our senses as a country and ban all peeps.
Oh, Jesus, peeps.
Chris, are you
telling
me?
Come on, I like
that. You know, there's not one flavor out there for you, Steve. Not one.
I would rather eat my own shit than eat a peep.
Oh, God.
Well, that could be an exhibit.
Well, there went dinner in the Mountain Daylight time zone and billable Rick snack.
It's because of the art show in New York.
Peeps are disgusting. He's right.
I'll be honest with you, Jeremy and I don't agree on much, but all right-thinking, civilized people should be on board with Jeremy and me on this. Peeps are gross.
Okay, let's just go ahead.
I love
because
peeps.
I'm an iconoclast. We all know it.
Even the pink
ones.
Started out the program.
I
started out hating on Bob Seger, and it's all been downhill from there. Young hawk. I have never eaten a peep. I will never eat a peep.
Oh, I love you, Robin. Robin, you have all... I have tears in my eyes. You so endeared yourself to me.
What did they ever do to you?
Why?
This like Catholic believer, hand in hand with my atheist sister. I am.
Easy how you throw around that atheist moniker.
Is it because you're eating like a little canary or something or a bluebird?
No, they just taste
like
shit. No,
they're repulsive.
Yeah, they were
the very sight of them.
But you've never had one, so how do you know?
Yeah, I've never had a Twinkie. I've never had a Twinkie either, and I'm not going to start.
Word of mouth?
Listen.
Like marshmallows?
Listen.
Yes.
Listen, a long time ago, a very dear friend of mine at the time was talking about going to Outback Steakhouse with some friends. And he was a dogmatic eater. If it was not a potato or a piece of beef, wasn't going to eat it. If Arnold in PA was listening, he'd know another friend like that. But they sat down to dinner at, I remember just falling apart laughing, wasn't it? It had this wonderful, deep Southern West Virginia accent. Brilliant man. And the person who was dining with them proceeded to ladle sour cream all over his ribeye.
Ugh.
And in a minute,
not the potato.
Well, that too. Ah, hell, there's that sour cream shit all over the place. I was about ready to vomit. And he looks at my friend and says, "You ought to try it. It's delicious this way. Have you ever eaten it that way?" To which my friend replied, "No, and I ain't never ate no frosty dog turd before neither, and I ain't about to try."
So that's me
on Peeps. That's me on Twinkies. That's me on
no Twinkies.
And that's also me on Cadbury cream eggs. That was an early bone of contention between Annette and me.
I used to like those. They're too sweet.
Those are all good. Anymore. You know, the only candy, there's only one candy I don't like. It's the one that's called Circus Peanuts.
What?
Oh, Jesus. No, not like them either.
Bad. No, those are bad. And that's styrofoam.
And you like
it's
Peeps.
Like pieces
those are
of
packing.
Styrofoam.
Those are for packing and shipping.
Let us take.
Those are not for eating.
Recalling that memory is eternity, let's take a moment and recall that our dear departed friend Scott's favorite reference for Nitwit Nero was the demented circus peanut.
Yes. Homage to dear Scott.
Yeah, I just don't get those.
Yeah, forget it. Yeah, use those
your
styrofoam peanuts.
You get Peeps. You should look at, there's a really good like History Channel thing of where they came from. Go watch.
It's marshmallow with sugar on it. That's it.
No, does Ken Burns have a documentary?
I think I think they come from same place Slurm comes from.
What the hell's that?
Oh, come on. You've never seen Futurama, Christopher?
Oh, geez. Well, a long time ago. And I haven't seen any of the new ones. Slurm? I don't remember Slurm.
And I can't do a Peep because the inside of a Peep looks like a soft-boiled egg to me. And the very thought... I'm going to have to go and yak now because I just thought of a soft-boiled egg.
That's gross. I don't like that. You know what? I cannot eat 3 fried eggs because it disgusts me. 3 of them.
2 is okay?
How about 4?
2 is okay. But 3 grosses me out, and the only reason is because I saw the Simpsons episode where they were sitting down to eat, and Homer had a fish on his plate with 3 eyes.
Yeah, Blinky.
That's the first season.
The
nuclear industry complained, and that was immediately taken out of the opening credits.
Oh, every time I see, if I think about it, it just grosses me out.
By the way, what I mentioned, there is that really great show called The Food That Built America. It's a History Channel. I just put a link to it. There's a whole mess of them in there, and they explain how Kool-Aid and Peeps and Starbucks, anything. It's really, really good.
Yeah, you mean Starburst?
Starburst. Well, you know what? Starbucks pays me a lot of money right now, so.
Pony up, bitch.
Are they paying all your relocation fees to Burlington?
Well, I do contract work for them, but they still pay me a lot of money. But that will probably enter into it. And I'm about 90% sure, if anybody gives a shit about my Burlington move, I'm about 90% sure. So
are you if you go up there, are you going to be able to live roommateless?
I probably.
Wow.
What I think I may do, since it's always easier when you live somewhere to actually be able to go to apartments and visit them, I may do the roommate thing just to get there. And because if I wait to rent an apartment here, I would have to go there numerous times to look at places, because I will not trust the landlord to show me photos that are actually, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've looked at photos of a place and gotten there to look at it and was like,
oh no,
are you sure this is the same place in the photo?
Yeah, the email comes in, swimming pools, movie stars.
Yeah, they get there and like, no, a bathtub is not a swimming pool.
Oh, and by the way, Micah says Cadbury cream eggs were awesome. Then they changed the recipe. Now they're gritty and too sweet.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, you know what?
Oh, no, you know what? You know what happened?
What?
Here's what. One of the things that happened is that Cadbury in the United States, Cadbury doesn't make that chocolate. They contract. Hershey's bought the license, and if Hershey's is anything, it's fucking waxy cardboard, barely tastes like chocolate. So real Cadbury chocolate is delicious, the ones that are made in the UK. But Cadbury here in the US is Hershey made. And Hershey's, as far as I'm concerned, is like, it's like eating shit on a shingle. Damn, I got a shit fetish.
I hate to break it. And you know, my taste buds have changed. I used to have a real big sweet tooth. It's gone. I'm into savory now. Salty.
I'm the same way. Yeah, Robin.
Maybe it's an age thing, but...
I think so.
Every now and then I'll get a hankering for some chocolate, but about the sweetest thing I'm into now is peanut butter.
Yes. Yeah, because of that salty, too.
Yeah.
And it's all about the salt.
And, you know, maybe some of it's mental, because I don't want to... Have to snort a line of metformin or anything.
Ex-smokers. Maybe that's the common one too.
Ooh, that could be.
I'm not too far.
By the way,
6 months? Yeah.
I hated peanut butter when I was 8 and 9 years old, and I still hate peanut butter. I cannot understand how anybody could ever eat it. It just has the nastiest taste to me. And it doesn't matter
shun
whether
the heretic,
it's fresh
shun the heretic.
Good. Peter Pan or crunchy or fresh ground out of a machine at the co-op where you pour the peanuts in and it spits out the peanut butter. I don't know what it is, but it's like coffee. I even detest the smell of coffee.
Good Lord.
It's just something about it that just rubs me the wrong way. And
you're
yet,
not really from Earth, are you,
I think
Roger?
It's tasty. I love the taste of beets.
Yeah, I love beets.
I used to grow three different varieties of beets, the Cayugas, the yellows, and the reds. And now that I have a much smaller garden, wife and I were talking, and no, the only beets I'm going to grow this year are, well, either early tall top or Detroit dark red. And she and I agreed that we just really like the flavor of what some people call dirt, but... I love the flavor of beets, and other people can't stand it. So, but taste buds are weird.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Hey, Roger, have you heard of a super taster? The concept of a super taster? Do you know anything about it?
Haven't got a clue what you're talking about.
Well, my mom told me about it. The only thing I just know anecdotally, there's supposed to be some people out there in the world who are super tasters, like superpower taste buds. And one of the signifiers, there's two major ones, I think. If you absolutely hate cilantro, can't stand it at all, like the smell maybe doesn't bother you too much, but once you taste it, you're
Christopher, that's genetic. That's genetic. Some people have
tasting is genetic.
Some people some people have a gene that makes cilantro taste like soap.
Yes, that's it. And the other thing is, and this could be because there's a lot of cilantro in Indian food. I never could understand why mom would never want to go to an Indian restaurant.
Depends on the type of Indian food, man. Food can be it ranges from extremely bland to with tons and tons and tons of spices. And as an aside, please understand, curry is not native to India.
Is that the English brought it over?
The English brought it over. I think some of the tastiest Indian food is in Goa, the Portuguese part. Or Madras, I think, is very, very heavily spiced.
I love all Indian food except for the stuff with nuts, tree nuts that I can't eat anyway. That's because I'll die.
But again, remember that what you buy over here is, I think it's specific to the region in and around Mumbai.
Hmm. I would love to go there, and I've met only through online and working for 30 years in IT. I know lots and lots of friends who are in India, and I know them well enough where if I called them up or sent them an email and said, "Hey, you know, could I stay overnight?" They would say, "Absolutely." I mean, we're tight. You know, I've worked with these people for years. I always have a place to stay in India.
By the way, one last question, then I'm going to shut up for a while because I'm talking too much and I want to hear from other people. Roger, I have to tell you something, man. I wish that you put together like a catalog or something of the shit that you grow, because I would be ordering Roger-grown veggies and whatever all the time.
Well, I don't grow for sale anymore. I grow for me and my wife and the cupboard.
Okay. Well, if you know of anybody who would grow for sale and is on par with you, I would love to know that person because, you know, I don't trust anything around here, but I don't know what I should trust and shouldn't.
I got a tip for anybody who wants to deal with that. Go to your farmer's market and ask the market manager who the newest farmer in the market is, because there's always going to be somebody that's brand new. And your chances of actually talking to the farmer of a new farm at the farmer's market is very high. The established farmers are usually a little bit bigger farms, and they're simply a hired hand selling at the booth. But if you go to the newest farmer, it's likely to be the actual farmer, and talk to them and just chat with them, figure out what they grow. And on, let's say it's a Saturday market, on one Saturday, you look at them and say, you know, I'd really like some red leaf lettuce, some beets and some carrots. And then say, well, you know, I'd like to spend $10. And have that person make up a food box for you that when you walk into the market, he hands you your $10 box of food. And start there. And if that one isn't happy, then find another small farmer. But when you walk around farmer's market, find the farmer that is actually selling their own product. And it helps out the new guy. It helps out the really small farmer that can't afford to hire somebody to do his farmer's market duty and all the rest of it. And you'll get the best of the best if you do that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I consider whatever you say, Roger, when it comes to food and growing stuff, to me, it's like Moses coming from Sinai. I'm serious.
Well, no, I
wait,
I
did
don't
you just say Roger cooks
desert.
With cyanide?
Okay.
Kind of a nerd, I guess.
Yeah.
Never
Steve,
mind.
But Steve, you're moving to a place that where they're all about that.
I understand, but I probably won't be moving. I learned a lot in this trip. I got very lucky. I went into a little diner, and the woman who was the server, she's a tour guide for the university. So I'm like, I said to her, oh, you are the person I need to talk to find out all the shit that I need to know. And she gave me a whole bunch of where I should live, where I should not live, what's this, what's that. And it was pretty awesome. It was pretty awesome. I had a really good time.
Did you have a little mini horn in?
Jeremy? Oh, no, you know, Jeremy, we weren't able to
come.
Oh, damn, you two could have gotten together and disagreed.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's...
You really didn't expect me to leave that, just let that bounce idly off the hoop, did you?
You're right. You know what we haven't heard about tonight? Nothing Roman. Have we?
No.
Oh, God, you have to bring that up.
Okay, I'm right. Sorry.
Well,
I'm sorry.
But I do have some things I need to do. Thank you very kindly to Dave and the Blind. Dave and the Blind just got us down to $1,170 to go.
Remember, I put that $10 challenge.
Well, yours is met, so $1,160. Okay, cool. Here's some cash from my Disney Plus refund. They charged me an annual fee when I only signed up for once, but they corrected it. Enjoy, and by the way, have fun. And don't try to retire on it all. Try not to spend it all in one place, Dave. Thank you. Thank you. And by the way, Dave said Christine sent her congratulations for my primary win over the departed.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you. And we are now
down.
So
you'll be on the November ballot. You're going to be on the same ballot as everybody else, right?
Yep.
Wait a minute. Cool. When I checked the results yesterday, they had you at 33% and your opponent at 66%.
What?
Yeah. I checked West Virginia, District 51.
That was probably 2022.
Oh. I thought I was very careful to make sure it was the 2024. I'm sorry if I posted bad stuff. I got deleted, but damn, I was about to give my condolences, and now I'm hearing that, well, not the first time I was ever wrong.
Let's see. Let me check that.
And Robin, do you have the breakdown? I'm just interested to know this in West Virginia with the primaries. Do you know the breakdown of percentages of turnout?
The turnout was abysmal.
Democratic. Yeah, I remember you mentioned that. Do you have rough numbers around Democratic registered Democrats turning out versus registered Republicans turning out?
The Republicans did a much better job. 2-1.
Hey, Robin, I just found
total votes cast 1,178, yep. 618 to 560.
I love saying that. I'm like, I know her. That one, I know her right there.
She won. Yes. She won.
She won. I know her.
and thank you to Rob. Rob just got us down to $1,110 to go. If by some miracle we could bring in $210, we would be done funding this past Monday by the time we start more in Monday. And by the way, back to the food porn discussion. Matt in San Francisco said Skippy Extra Crunchy Peanut Butter is a food group as far as I'm concerned. Right there.
Damn straight.
Damn right there.
Although I'm going to the natural stuff more and more and more, trying to find that.
I like the, I got two things that I look for. I prefer zero sugar for obvious reasons, because the peanuts have enough carbs. The other thing that I try to avoid
is palm oil.
Yeah, because the orangutans.
Yeah. I mean, the world apparently runs on palm oil. I'm trying to figure out why American corporations need it.
Right. They're fucking soybeans.
I mean, we used to talk about, Oreos have palm oil, and at least at the time, Newman O's didn't.
Yeah, that's all about the orangutans.
Oh, Randy Radar, Gnid Gnod. You beat your opponent? That's abuse of a corpse.
Okay, I confirmed what you said. I must have been on a page from before. Sorry about that.
I just posted some shit.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Roger. And so I don't have to go out and take my signs down yet.
The only time I ever ran for anything, by the time they figured out the number of seats available and all the rest of it, less people qualified by signatures to get on the ballot than there were spots available for the position being elected. So we were elected by our petition to the number, and my name never appeared on the ballot. And that continued for almost 20 years.
Well, we don't in West Virginia, you don't have to go and ask Mother May I of the party. If you got the filing fee, you can run.
Hey, Robin, I bet I know what your opponent's campaign song was. I'm guessing it was Bon Jovi's Dead or Alive.
Stop. Stop. Just stop.
Let's not besmirch Bon Jovi, for God's sakes.
Jeremy, you're not helping.
Hey, Robin.
No, Bon Jovi's a national treasure.
Robin?
One second.
Sorry about that.
Our kind anonymous internet friend said, I'll match that 10 bucks and pitch in another 40. If in the time remaining, which is 22 minutes, you can rake in another 40 bucks. So we've got a chance to get down to 1060. You know, just 6 short years before the Battle of Hastings. So there's a... Oh, that'll get us actually down to 1010, if I'm reading that right. Yeah, so that would get us down to 1010. Thank you, kind anonymous internet friend. Thank you much.
Just got some bad news. UAW loses bid.
Will you please get out of my brain?
Oh, sorry. You know, I have to tell you, when you said that thing about Sammy Bad Breath and his wife or mother, whoever it was, posting that, and when you said it was the New York Times, I frankly didn't believe it. I have come to I do not believe anything in the New York Times, which is why I read the Financial Times, Le Monde, and The Guardian. And I will tell you, I find the Financial Times to be among the best.
Well, there's some damn fine satire writing. You've proven that lately.
But the best thing about their articles is they're not really long because there's very little commentary or what does this expert say or that expert. It just gives you.
It's Jack Webb, just the facts, ma'am.
It's just the facts, ma'am. If you want, they do have, you know, opinion people and all that. But it generally just gives, which is again why their articles are not that long. So, damn it. Well, you know what? VW took a while, so I will not count Sean Fain out.
Oh no,
all.
No. But the thing is, there's always a backstory, and the backstory. Okay, so the UAW lost its election in Vance, Alabama, at the Mercedes-Benz plant. I'm sure the executives there in Stuttgart are hoisting flagons of schnapps. But what it took in order to beat the UAW, the entire state government of Alabama, the entire maggot government, had to bark and grunt and hoot that the people were going to be out of a job. Then the Mercedes-Benz, which actually said, we are okay with however it goes. We are happy to work with the unions. We work with the unions in Germany. And then the management at the plant made every worker sit down before every shift and listen to a harangue against unions, and then watch a video about how bad unions are. And for anyone interested, guess where they got the idea?
Guess. The Simpsons.
No.
Oh.
Walmart.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Walmart.
I thought that was one of the original Troy McClure movies, or films. This is Troy McClure. You may remember me from such films as...
Union's Bad.
Union Bustin', yeah. Union Bustin' and You.
But there was even a court question as to, and I think it was limited to West Virginia some years back, because I remember Boss Man Wayne just being incensed about it, that said, no, workers do not have the right to opt out of anti-union organizing. They were so the workers at that plant in Vance, Alabama, were essentially forced to sit and be subjected to North Korean propaganda. Well, what the hell? Ain't you happy making $12.50 an hour? Ain't no way the union's ever going to negotiate you no $40 an hour like people are making at Ford and GM and whatever Chrysler is now.
Or Mercedes in Germany.
Ding.
Yeah. Exactly.
Did you see this? It's in the article that I posted. There was a silver lining. It says union organizers faced far greater resistance than at Volkswagen. After the union announced that about the union cards being signed, Mercedes replaced the plant's chief executive and eliminated the two-tier wage plan that longer-serving employees paid more and implemented 11% pay raise. That tells me that the company sees the writing on the wall, and it's just a matter of time.
And that again, Steve, is an ancient tactic. My daddy was a union man when he worked for Union Carbide down at Alloy on the silicon furnace just down the mountain. And a guy that worked for Union Carbide that was non-union down in Charleston said, well, you know, every time you get a raise, I get a raise. But the only thing is, every now and then, management will come along and hand me two very thin slices of bread with a whole bunch of shit in the middle and say, eat hearty, and I ain't got no union, and I got to eat it, and you don't.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with that, but I think that's a sign that the company sees the writing on the wall. Because the whole big thing, as I know, I'm not a union person, so you can tell me if I'm wrong. One of the hugest things that the UAW has been doing is getting rid of these two-tier wage systems. And right. The fact that the company got rid of it themselves tells me that the company sees the writing on the wall. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, and one of the organizing principles behind what was – I've actually been following this. One of the organizing principles behind what was going on in Vance was this, and they had a great slogan, we've got to end the Alabama discount. Because if you are an auto worker in Alabama, you work for cheaper than any other auto worker in the country. You may even have a lower standard of living. You probably do have a lower standard of living than, say, an auto worker in South Korea or an auto worker in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Listen, Robin, word will get down to those folks about what happened in Tennessee with VW?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tennessee. Mm-hmm.
Chattanooga,
was it Chattanooga? Yeah. Word will get down.
Well, but see,
the difference in wages.
And this is one of those moments where having an actual labor-friendly president matters, okay? Because the way management does this kind of, the way corporate does this kind of thing, is they'll, like in Chattanooga, they'll dither and they'll dilly-dally for a year, and then they'll come back and they'll say, well, we believe that the union no longer has the majority support of the workers. And we want another referendum.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the oldest, dirtiest tricks in the book. But in the case of Vance and Mercedes-Benz, the UAW was proactive, and they have filed a slew of National Labor Relations Act complaints against Mercedes-Benz. And Mercedes has to answer all of them, and if they get busted, if they lose, you have to have another vote, or that is a remedy that the NLRB has.
Not if Trump is president again.
Bingo.
Forget all that noise. Yeah.
Bingo. And the vote was 56% no, 44% yes, when in fact they had a supermajority of people sign union cards. What does that tell you about the effect of the mental abuse that went with all of this?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is Sean Fain and the aggressive stance that he has taken in bringing – look, I think I said it. Labor is on the march.
It looks like it. And Steve,
labor
to piggyback
on the march.
And Steve, to piggyback on what you were saying, once the raises and the wage increases take hold in Chattanooga, and those people start having some playing around vacation money, they're going to go down to the Alabama Riviera coast to vacation, and those people in Alabama, the natives, are going to be like, "Hey, well, what do you do for a living?" Do that same exact fucking thing you do, buddy. But guess what? I got playing around money.
Yeah, I got me some of that. Jed Clampett walking around money. Yeah. Hey, thank you. Thank you very kindly. Jeremy jumped back in. Thank you to Texas Tea. We've only got $20 to go on our Kind Anonymous Friends Challenge, and that'll get us down to 10-10. So, golly, could we make it an even $1,000 deep hole? And do 30?
I'm curious, Robin. I missed if you said anything about this week because I was absent. I apologize. But what did you said she has opinions on him in the past. What did Agnes think of J.D. Vance showing up at the courtroom this week and being Trump surrogate?
Oh, Annette just despises him.
I wanted to hear this.
if he was on a ventilator, she'd pump in nitrogen.
Or she'd pull the plugs.
Yeah, right.
It's mean spirited.
No, it's not. It's not mean spirited. He's, and I don't know how many of y'all follow Trey Crowder online. He's brilliant.
Oh, he's the best.
And he uses the same term for Jerk Deluxe Vance that Annette uses, that I use, fake hillbilly. You know, I'm sorry, opening up a can of Lux canned pinto beans and making some cornbread from a Jiffy box don't qualify you as Appalachian. And I'll bet that son of a bitch has never even done that.
A quick jump back to the union thing. Being a public employee, the Janus decision had an effect on our workplace. Does the Janus decision have any application to the UAW?
Honestly, I'm not that familiar with the decision, Roger.
The Janus decision, basically, how it applied to the California Teachers Association was that teachers no longer had to pay union dues because the union did political activity and you could opt out. And a further lawsuit said you still had to pay the agency fee, i.e. the amount of money that the California Teachers Association used to support their negotiation stuff. But to support the actual union, you no longer had to pay union dues, but the contract that was negotiated covers all employees of the school district.
Right, and that's really, that's the typical Republican model now.
What I'm wondering is if a UAW contract with Volkswagen, that whether the Janus decision allows some of the workers at Volkswagen to not be paying, quote, union dues, unquote, but only have to pay the agency fee, and yet the union has to support grievances that go up through the system, even for the non-dues-paying members.
I mean, okay. I think it's in play. I don't think it has any particular applicability. People who don't want to be in a union in a non-closed shop state get to reap the benefits of union membership without actually being part of the union.
This is somewhere where I'd like to see a case come about that if the union negotiates a contract for the person that screws the widget into the doohickey, the other person down the line that's not a union member, when they do get the union wage increase, that non-union member gets to stay at the old pay scale and the union member gets the new pay scale.
Oh, I'd love that. That's called incentive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A couple of notes here. By the way, thank you, Emilio. Emilio just jumped in, taking us down to $15 to go on the matching challenge from our kind anonymous friend. $25 to get us down to a nice, even $1,000 hole. I like it when the bottom of the hole is level and even, and it makes it easier to jump up and down and yell for Lassie. Thank you, Emilio. Speaking of the dearly departed, Brother Deacon Asa said a little bit ago, tomorrow marks 9 full years, oh my goodness gracious, since our dear friend Bill Mr. Stress Miller said his final goodbye. I'll queue up some deep archives with his calls. So check in on the rerun stream after. There'll be some blast from the past, and I think that's back when some guy named Bob was filling in for me.
Wait a minute, 9 years?
Mm-hmm.
That can't be right.
Yeah, it is.
Jesus God, that's a long time.
Isn't it just?
Almost a decade.
Well, I was still living in California when that happened, and that's 6 years.
I was still a Chicagoan.
You could.
I remember,
hey, Robin,
the
you were
night,
talking. Go ahead, Steve.
I remember the night he had the stroke.
That was even further back.
Yeah, I was living in East Harlem at the time because I remember hearing it and thinking, are we hearing somebody have a stroke right on air?
Wow.
9 years? Jeez.
Yeah, and since we talked some about the Supreme Court earlier, I've got a good note from, they're all good notes, from Darlene in Connecticut, just to kind of wrap us up. It is scary, Darlene says, that Brett Kavanaugh's subjective opinion stated as a presumed fact that Ford's pardon of Nixon is now seen as a good decision went unchallenged and unchecked during Trump's immunity appeal. It was a big reveal and supports the reporting that Kavanaugh wants an all-powerful unitary executive branch. Well, he was elevated by the ultimate unitary executive. You know, that was the operating philosophy of the dim leader's reign of error. Moreover, Darlene says, I'm getting exasperated with the three so-called liberals on the SCOTUS. They're complicit. They're not calling out the fascism of the other six individuals on the court. Collegiality, Darlene. They are allowing statements such as Kavanaugh's pardon comment, Alito's rewriting of history, and Robert's purposeful professional reader of things, and Roberts's purposeful misinterpretation of what the 14th Amendment and also the lower three-judge panel's decision on immunity to go unchallenged in real time. What Roberts said about the jury system in this country was absolutely outrageous and sickening. The three are not calling out the scheme coined by Senator Whitehouse and of which he continues to provide mountains of proof of its existence. They're a willing part of the SCOTUS' slow erosion of our Constitution by way of their silence and enabling. All 9 justices signed that letter to the Senate committee stating the Supreme Court justice should not be brought before the committee for questioning. Was it about signing a letter in exchange for a certain decision the three preferred? If so, what was that decision? Still waiting. If so, does that make any of us comfortable? Is that kind of horse trading politicization okay? Can you imagine if all three of those justices spoke against what the other six are doing? I know they're scared that COVID Barrett will say they're being strident and unladylike. But, oh well, small price to pay to be on the right side of history and do the right thing. This nation is in turmoil and on pins and needles about what the Supreme Court is going to do next. I'm losing patience, Darlene says. SCOTUS is abusing the citizenry. It's destroying the social fabric and our ability to even travel. Women of childbearing years are altering plans on where they go to school and where they may wind up living, etc. And if you think that this isn't going to alter relationships between men and women in substantive ways we can't even imagine, then you got another thought coming. Yeah, and Darlene, I think that altering those relationships is exactly what they have in mind. And their prophet, at least last weekend, was Harrison Butthurt.
He could not have more
clearly enunciated the position of the hardcore, most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties on the court. He did wear a black robe. By the way, he wore, for anyone wondering, he wore a black robe with a cheetah print bow tie tucked underneath. What was that Matt said earlier? Yeah, go ahead, Roger.
I'd like to amplify what Darlene just said. When the Republicans are in power, they will appoint the most far-out right-wing individual that they think they can get through the Senate. When a Democrat is in the office, they present the most milquetoast somebody who could be called a liberal that they could get through the Senate. They do not pick somebody that is as crazy as William O. Douglas was when he finally retired from the court. But the Democrats do not put an outrageous, outright liberal justice up for a Supreme Court nominee.
Right.
And yet the Republicans have no hesitation whatever to take the most right-wing fascist idiot and put them up, and then the Senate approves them.
And, Roger, do you think that might be because we do not have as – I mean, maybe there's something like it, like the Constitution Society or something, but do you think that might be because we do not have a – brutally well-funded, ferociously wealthy, left-ish organization to counter the Federalist Society?
Clearly, because a left-wing type person is never going to amass wealth because they do not believe in the exploitation of the worker of this country.
Oh, there you go, bringing Kloss into it again.
Except George Soros.
Fuck George Soros.
I know.
He is not a left-wing radical person.
No.
Not even close. We don't have any. He's just been dead for how long now? Yeah.
Oh, Chris, they're very radical left-wing people do exist.
They don't have money.
But they don't have spaceship money.
Certainly not in the public's in any points of power.
I mean, I think of people like Pete Seeger, who had this banjo.
This machine kills fascists.
Whatever the hell it was, but Pete Seeger never had any fucking money.
No.
He may have lived a very comfortable life. I'm not saying that he didn't have money to do what he wanted to do. By his record making and the rest of that, but he didn't have much money like Elon Musk is now negotiating to get his $54 billion for 1 year's work given to him.
It's actually a 10-year contract.
10-year. I don't $5 billion, $54 billion. What the hell's the difference? I mean, a penny there, a penny there. You know.
Yeah,
hey, Robin, like Everett Dirksen said,
pretty soon we're talking about real money. 1 second, Christopher, and then you. Okay. I have to send out thanks to Kevin. Kevin, thank you. Kevin just got us down to an even $1,000 to go. Our kind anonymous internet friends challenge is met. And Kevin said, here you go. after my Lassie comment. In memory of June Lockhart. Oh! That's beautiful. And Brother Deacon Asa, program note, said, deep archives for tomorrow, not after the program tonight. Sorry for the miscommunication. Wasn't on you, Brother Deacon. That was entirely on me. And one other program note, I will be gone again next Thursday. And I guess this is the time that I say, I guess this is going to happen a little bit between now and November, and I will beg your kind forbearance. But my absences, as ever, do not count toward the fundraising hole. So there's that. Yes, go ahead, Christopher.
Well, I just wanted to say, you were saying that J.D. Vance is the fake hillbilly. That reminds me of our fake Cajun. What's his name? The senator from Louisiana.
Oh,
John Kennedy?
Yeah. Oh, Senator Jubilation T. Cornprone?
Oh, that whole act of his is, it's just that. It's a complete act.
Yeah, all you have to do is
Isn't
go
he
back.
A carpetbagger?
Well, not, all you have to do is look on YouTube, and there are videos of him back when he was the state treasurer of Louisiana, Stan, actually talking without the gooey cornpone foghorn leghorn accent.
Foghorn leghorn.
The man went to England and studied at Oxpatch.
Yes.
He's a performative fraud. I was about to screw up something horrible. Let me go to the stress line real quick. Hey, welcome to the program.
So this is how you treat me?
What? I don't know who's on the stress line.
No, I know you don't know who's on the stress line, but I'm on the stress line. God damn it!
Yeah, damn it,
motherfucker. See, I mean, but anyway. You guys were talking about J.D. Vance and, you know, that she would add, what did you say, and that would add to the line if he was on oxygen?
Yeah, no, nitrogen.
Nitrogen. So this is my thing. I wouldn't piss on him if he was on fire. And y'all know I used to get paid a lot of money to piss on white men. So.
Oh, that's that true.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mm-hmm. Rama Lama.
Ramallah ding dong. It's like these motherfuckers. So I think this should be a list of people that Tracy would not piss on if they were on fire. So, you know, and they all, and it's all white men. So Leon Scum, J.D. Vance, you know, the person
Donald
that's
J.
on fire without
question.
Is he on question.
That list? Donald J. Trump?
Yes. Yeah.
He's
mean,
not really white.
Because I know
one.
These people. You know, these people are freaks, and you know that they get their freak on in the, you know, behind closed doors. So could you imagine? So like I said, it was, you know, yes, I was being fetishized. I don't give a fuck. Pay me what I pay me. And I won't do it now, but times are tough, y'all. So I might have to go and pull out the pleather suit and the knee high boots. Platform boots, yo.
Bring it.
Just kidding.
There's such thing as a whip sharpener?
I just got text from... No, well, see, I didn't use whips. I had a riding crop. And it had Black Power. It was the Black Power symbol on the tip of it. Yeah. Now, see, this would be a great stress reliever for me, especially with what the fuck is going on right now. And it's like, I miss the days of beating white, of getting paid to whip a white man's ass. It's like, I miss that shit. And the more I hear these fools talking, I just, oof, that part. But anywho, again, congratulations, Robin, on your, I'm so, so proud of you.
Thank you.
I am looking forward to great things. And I'm meeting with some people tomorrow. I'm going to a garden party.
Tell them your girl needs a chat.
Not happy about it.
Sorry.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to, no. Send me whatever information you have about your campaign, seriously. And I'm going to see if I can help you to fund it from some of the, you know, and use some
and play off the white guilt to get people to give you money for your campaign. I have no problems with, you know, asking people for money.
Hillbilly girl in Appalachia needs help.
That part, sis. Because we need.
And I'll even come out there to Beverly Hills and swan around the cement pond.
I know it'll be rough for you, sis. I know it would be such a hard task. But you're willing to make that sacrifice. I know.
I'll take the hit
to come to L.A. You'll take the hit. You'll take one for the team, and do that. But yeah, no, I want you to win this so bad that I can taste it for you. And so,
Robin, you can stay. Whatever you can stay at Randy Newman's house.
I didn't know you were friends.
You just have to sing for him. That's
Randy
all.
Newman.
Yeah. I love L.A. Yeah.
I love L.A., but no, sis. I am proud of you, and I just hope that we get more people like you in office, and like you guys are saying that we don't have, you know, one of the things that if I ever won the lotto, like it gets up to over $1 billion, I would fund the counterpart to the Federalists. I would fund that shit because I've been broke all my life. So whatever I could do to save, you know, there's so many things that I would do with the money that build communities, build, you know, mixed income housing, community centers, you know, take vacant land and turn it into housing, you know, shit like that. That's what I would do. So when I see these, you know, and I'm going to throw shade on my black billionaire, you know, sisters and brothers, especially the ones that started off as drug dealers. You literally poisoned your own community. And what have you done to make, you know, reparations to your own community for the damage that you inflicted? That's just me. How dare I think these ways?
Yes. And by the way, you just got a note from Matt in San Francisco. Tracy makes it sound so nice whipping a white man, makes this gold star gay want to pay to watch.
Fundraising.
Can you imagine a fundraiser that would do on your behalf to whip what that, you know, they would have, the white man would have to get paid to get their asses whipped. And then the fundraiser would be for other folks to pay. It would be a pay-per-view. It would be like a pay-per-view thingy or what have you. Or what is it? Or Just Fans? Is that what it is?
No. It would be, no. It would be MMA, Maximum Masculine Ass Whipping.
Yes! And, oh my God. I mean, I know they do plus size, you know, bondage gear. So your girl might have to, you know, dust off the skills and to humiliate, you know, how to humiliate white men. Y'all, you know, what a fucking hell of a fundraiser.
God, we'll set you up. Listen, we'll set you up a 900 number and the horn will never need funding again.
Right. Just, you know, and real quick, because I told you, I don't know, because I've told so many different stories, but I actually had a regular client who would come to my house, strip down into his skivvies, and literally pretend to be having sex with his girlfriend or what have you in order to breed me more white slaves. No lie. I you cannot make this shit up.
Oh,
and I would just sit there in my house.
You know, I overfill a roster, so, you know, we're okay for where we are. But I do want to point one little story out, and then Steve's got his hand up. This will probably make our dear friend Tom in sunny San Rafael eat dirt and run rabbits. Just keeping up with the list of things that trans women are not allowed to compete in. We've had complaints over the over hot dog eating contests. Trans women have a natural advantage over biological cis women. and eating hot dogs. Trans women have a natural advantage over cis women in chess.
Yeah, I've heard chess. Yes.
Bicycling.
Chess.
Billiards. Dart throwing. And now, hi Tom, sailing.
What the fuck?
Takes me away to where I'm going.
Well done, Kevin. Yep, the World Sailing Council has voted to adopt new eligibility rules for transgender athletes at the Federation's 2024 mid-year meeting.
Kevin, you're going to put Christopher Cross out of a job.
How's that? How's that one? Job.
Transgender female athletes will only be permitted to participate in the female category of an event or as a female athlete in the mixed category of an event if they have not undergone male puberty. They are also able to demonstrate that the concentration of testosterone in their blood has been less than 2.5 nanomoles per liter continuously for a period of at least 12 months prior to the first event in which they wish to compete. In addition, transgender female athletes must maintain testosterone in their blood below 2.5 nanomoles per liter at all times. Transgender male born as female athletes will be permitted to compete in the male category of an event or as a male in the mixed category of an event if they provide a written and signed declaration that their gender and identity is male. Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's always the same thing. The trans guys get ignored and treated like crap because they could never possibly compete against biological cis males because women... Trans guys are guys, y'all. There are trans guys out there that are ripped, yep, chiseled, rock hard, and buff as fuck, and could probably beat the ass of 90% of cis men. And they can be jacked to the jaws on testosterone. And international sailing, don't give a fuck. On the other hand, every cis woman on these crews is going to have more testosterone in her system than any trans woman. I'll be so glad when we fucking grow up as a species. God damn it.
I mean, for real,
we're not close yet.
When you say these things, I just, you know, it's that thing, you know, with the whole thing that you're talking about with the DEI thing and how when the ship crashed into the bridge in Maryland and it's like the DEI man, motherfucker, he was elected.
Oh, by the way, and by the way, Harrison Butthurt in his speech last week to Benedictine College graduates, he also found time to call out the heresy of DEI. It's exhausting, isn't
it,
Tracy?
I'm working on a speech. It's going to be one of my, I can't really give the details about where I'm speaking, but let's just say that is a pretty fucking big deal. Once we make the announcement, I will tell you guys where and when I'm speaking. But one of the things that I am talking on is accessibility. And that's, you know, and also how it is we can fund certain things, but we can't fund others. When you spend more money, you know, one of the talking points is, it's amazing how, you know, y'all say the more police we have, the safer the city is. Well, for the amount of money that we spend, you know, our LAPD budget is more than some country's military budget for the entire country. Are you understanding what I'm saying? That's just LAPD. It might include the sheriff's department as well, but I don't think so. But if it was truly a fact that more police break the safety, then LA should be the safest city in the world, right?
There shouldn't be one single crime ever.
Not one single crime.
One of the things that I'm working on is on crisis response and what we're asking for. And it's like, y'all want to spend all this, so this is what we're calling it. It's just budget dust in the grand scheme of things of the broader, larger City of Los Angeles budget. But somebody almost said it to me today, Robin, because we were in a meeting about, I hadn't planned on speaking, and then they're like, such and such, well, are you sure, are you free? And I'm like, I see what you motherfuckers are doing. I'm like, white guilt don't work. There's no such thing as reverse, there's no such thing as black guilt. No, that shit don't work on me. But I knew I had to do the speech. But the thing is, it's like, why do we have, you spend all this money on shit that is not working, and yet it's so easy to cut funding for programs that do work. I got 3 minutes to do this, and I've already got my, my talking points and everything. But like I said, once the official announcement is made, I will let you know. But I'm very excited because I love LA. Okay, go ahead. Cue Randy Newman. Yes. I love LA. Uh-huh. I love my city.
I know.
I am a proud second generation Angeleno.
You love LA the way I love West Virginia.
Exactly. This is
warts
to the
and
point
all.
That I'm even considering. That's to the point that I'm considering. Dusting off the patent leather boots, and getting the riding crop so I can afford.
You'll be hell. Listen, I do have to wrap things up, and I don't want to leave without Steve saying whatever he has whatever is on his mind.
Well, I just wanted to say this: all this thing about who was it? Trans women who eat hot dogs better?
Apparently so.
Two words: Marcus Backman.
That's it.
Oh.
Rama Lama,
ding dong.
What did you say, Steve? I'm sorry.
Marcus Bachman. Michelle batshit crazy Bachman's conversion therapy husband.
Oh, okay. No, you can. Okay.
Given a Minnesota State Fair corn dog could put Linda Blair to shame.
Maybe they should have put that on the flag. Yeah.
It is Linda Blair, is it? No, it's not Linda Blair. No, Deep Throat. Who am I thinking of?
Yes. Oh, what's her name?
Linda Lovelace.
Linda Lovelace, yeah. Put her to shame.
And they should put that on the Minnesota flag.
She
oh, quit it, Christopher.
off a
trailer hitch through a 50-foot garden hose.
Thank you, because I knew there was another part, I can't with these people. I just can't. So, I know you gotta go, sis, but again, remember I told you about how I've been having panic attacks and stuff like that. I didn't have a full blown panic attack, but I had an absolute meltdown. The other day. Well, no, not the other day, today. Just tears, because it's just, everything is so fucking overwhelming right now. So, whoever your higher power is, or whatever the case may be, y'all lift me up, because your sister is going through some shit.
I'm sorry.
I'm okay for now, but all joking aside, the struggle is real. But I'm here. And I promise you guys, I won't disappear on y'all.
Yeah, stick around on
Send me a text, because I couldn't get it. I tried to get in through the head on live link on the page, but Skype. I couldn't get in. So somebody will
Roger,
you
know, Roger,
somebody send me the Skype
Roger,
link.
Roger or Jeremy, could you please bring Tracy?
Don't call me. Just text it to me if you can or whatever.
Yeah, just message the link.
Because I
got
to do some stuff on my phone, so just text it. Message the link to me. And Robin, I love you. I will let you go because I got a couple of more calls to make. But you know, whatever I can do on my end to make you. Tell me what you're running for again, because I want to make sure I get it. You know me. I want to make sure I say it right. You know your name, your identity, and who.
The West Virginia House of Delegates, District 51 seat.
Okay.
Robin Roxanne Kincaid.
Well spoken and clean tomorrow during your talk.
Yeah, she clean too.
And she clean too. And she articulate and well groomed.
Yeah. Well groomed. Yeah, you better be well groomed.
Well groomed. Yeah.
Well groomed.
Get your locks in place, girl.
Well, see, and I gotta make sure I wear my key.
Yeah. You can't overestimate wearing the teepus is.
The teepus, especially since they're paid for, y'all. So I bet you wear those.
And
bitches.
They're paid for too. Oh, please let me go. Please let me go. They can't come back for him from the pawn shop. I'm sorry, Jeremy.
No, they paid for
Tracy, what's your email so I can send you a link?
You can't just send it to my phone number? On Skype?
They don't have your phone. You're on the stress line.
Robin, can you send it to somebody, my phone number or whatever? Because you're in the Skype chat, right? So can you send them my phone number so they can text it to me or whatever?
Yeah, I will do that.
Just send it to me, Robin, and I'll text her from my phone with it.
Okay, stand by.
It only took three brains. It only took three brains for us to figure that shit out.
Two and a half. It's Friday.
And Tracy, in all seriousness, knock him dead. Go out there and kill him.
And we know you will.
Yep.
I'm over the moon, y'all. I am over.
It's very exciting.
The fucking
very, very exciting.
Moon.
We're excited for you.
It's gonna be a great speech.
Right. It's. I have, like I said, I have all my talking points and all that stuff. I think this will be my entree into paid public speaking. I'm not even putting pressure on myself about that. This is what I want to do. And, you know, it's, if I could do what I do on, when we talk on Robin's show and stuff like that, could you imagine, a prepared speech?
I would like to give you one piece of advice because my degree is in speech communication. When you're doing a public speech.
Who's talking?
Roger.
Roger. Let Robin go. Robin got to go, and we'll talk about this on the back porch. So I'm going to hang up the stress line, and somebody send me the text so I can join on the back porch.
Perfect.
Okay.
And I'm out.
All right, later. And I am too. Thanks, y'all. I will. I'll put this in the chat in a second after I'm not talking. It was a great conversation this evening, everybody. And thanks to the Horn Family Community Congregation, those of you who helped get us down to $1,000 this week. That means we're funded for all but $100 of Tuesday. We got Wednesday. No, all but $100 of Monday. We got Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday to go. So we'll be at $1,300 on Monday, and I can't wait to get back here because the morans will be piled up like cordwood. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to our challenge makers. Thanks to you for the challenge, Ralphs, and to our kind anonymous internet friend. And thank you to you, Steve, from Steve in New York. And thanks to all of you who responded. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger and Jeremy in the old holler tree. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, if you're a podcast member of the community, please, pretty please, like each episode. Make sure you're subscribed on a couple of platforms. Leave a comment here and there. It really does help. Just a word or two helps build awareness of the program and helps other people see it on the various platforms. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, Ben Birch has busted his ass for over a quarter of a century saving progressive talk radio on the Internet, and now, Ben Birch is hanging it up, and as of June 1st, the White Rose will go dark, so please download anything you want from there, and there's some great old programs. Anything you want, please get it now. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Thank you. Thank you so much to CRMW. Please stay safe. Look, pay attention to when you get your next booster and get it promptly. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots because you know why. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. And, of course, if a bleached blonde, dear God, what was it all? Bleached blonde, butch, build, what comes your way barking and grunting and stomping on her spork feet, ignore her like the plague because she is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.